morning. What the? Do you remember when someone asked a question about how deja vu works on Mystery Hour, which should be back today, by the way, for the first time in almost 5 weeks, given the incredibly inconsiderate nature of the news recently. But I have deja vu with some stories. I sit here and I look at a report or I look at a release, and I think, oh, we must talk about this, it's very important. And then I realise we talked about it before. And then I realise that the story from which I'm deriving my interest, the story which I'm going to use as a launch pad into a topic, looks exactly the same as the story that we used last time. I'm talking about the appalling treatment of mothers in British maternity wards.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a national investigation has concluded women and babies are being failed by NHS maternity services in England. The interim reports found there's a lack of kindness and compassion, as well as issues including racism and staff shortages. Baroness Amos is leading the government-ordered review. Her final report is due out in April.
What I have been asked to do is to come up with some clear national recommendations that will stop this and will make a difference. It just cannot continue.
The number of asylum seekers being housed temporarily in hotels in the UK has fallen to the lowest level for 18 months. Home Office figures just released show the total stood at just over 30,000 at the end of last year. A row has broken out after the Conservative leader refused to apologise for claiming Labour is being called a paedo defenders party. It follows an exchange between Kemi Badenoch and Sir Keir Starmer at Prime Minister's Questions yesterday. Labour MPs have reportedly complained the phrase has been shouted at them following the Peter Mandelson-Jeffrey Epstein saga. Government Minister Alison McGovern's told LBC the remarks are not helpful.
I think it's not good. We as politicians are responsible for the words we say, and that we can debate issues in a very serious, robust and forthright way without using the language that's going to be inflammatory and make the whole situation of the challenge we're facing in communities much worse.
Peter Mandelson denies he had prior knowledge of Jeffrey Epstein's sex crimes during their friendship. LBC has learned security alerts are being recorded at Britain's nuclear submarine base every 3 days. 10 times as many reports were flagged at Faslane last year compared with before Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The Ministry of Defence has declined to disclose the nature of the alerts but says it flags every activity. And polls are open in the Gorton and Denton by-election in Greater Manchester. It was triggered by the resignation of the MP Andrew Gwynn. Polling stations close at 10 o'clock tonight. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 8 at 10,815. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, rain moving across Scotland into large parts of England and Wales throughout today, staying dry in the southeast of England with a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The Cupra Drive event is back. On top of existing offers, get £1,000 off across the range, including the dynamic Cupra Formentor, the sporty Cupra Terramar, and the daring Cupra Leon. Just order by 31st of March and collect by 30th of June. Follow your impulse. Search Cupra Drive Event. T's and C's and exclusions apply. UK retail customers 18 plus, new vehicles only, subject to availability. Saving including VAT apply to the on-the-road price.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the... I don't know, how interested are you in the below-the-bonnet ruminations that I sometimes inflict upon you in the morning, the whys and the wherefores of what we find interesting and indeed why we find it interesting. It occurred to me this morning, two things occurred to me this morning, one of which I explained to you a moment ago in characteristically clumsy fashion, but the other of which probably merits a mention, because I sometimes fall into the trap of thinking that you're here all day, every day. You know, and that you've been here for 2 decades. So I think, well, you know exactly what I'm talking about when I reference some obscure memory from the dim and distant past, from one of the mornings that we've spent together. Of course you don't. Even if you are listening to this programme every day, you're not paying rapt attention, are you? It's not as if you're sitting there with a notebook jotting down, well, unless you're one of the people trying to get me into trouble constantly, of course, but if you're normal, you're not sitting there with a notebook jotting down little insights and aperçus in order to record them for posterity. So it's sometimes worth me mentioning to you why interest in stories ebbs and flows. This one is probably the most obvious one of all, but it only struck me this morning that the older my children get, the less engaged I am immediately, the less sort of emotionally and immediately engaged I am with stories about maternity wards and maternity services. It's a failure of mine because it doesn't become more or less interesting as a story of national import according to how recently you were in one, does it? But we're only human. And when I first started talking to you about maternity services in England, I probably shouldn't have said the United Kingdom a moment ago in my trail. But when I first started talking to you about maternity services, I had never availed myself of them. I was in my first or second year in this job when my oldest was born. Information that was relayed to the pitifully small number of people that were listening to LBC at the time. The information of the birth of my first child was relayed to the listeners to this programme by a minicab driver who picked me up outside Hammersmith Hospital, and dropped me off without letting on, I think, that he knew who I was, and then phoned my holiday cover on LBC to reveal the successful details of my eldest child's birth, like a kind of foreign like a war correspondent, like an undercut, like a cross between River Cartwright or George Smiley and, oh, I don't know, John Simpson or Jeremy Bowen. I mean, he was phoning in a world exclusive from West London, and that is an indication of why, in the course of the last 20 years, I have found myself less interested with each passing year in what is going on in maternity wards. And I have to change that today, because how dare I base the importance of a story upon my own personal proximity to it? Maternity services in England are failing too many families with problems at every stage of the maternity journey. It's an interim report by Baroness Amos, who is leading a government-commissioned review. Racism, staffing and accountability issues are among the six factors already identified by the Baroness, with more than 8,000 people submitting evidence and the Baroness herself meeting with 400 families. We get the final recommendations in April. It's important to remember that she has reported seeing bad, poor, good and excellent care coexisting side by side. This is always something of a tightrope to walk, because you are listening to this as somebody who works in the sector and you are feeling maligned and attacked and unfairly judged when you know, or at least you're pretty sure, that you do a cracking job in often very difficult circumstances. So let's read that in reverse order. She has encountered care that is excellent, good, bad and poor. All of those things exist, but of course reports like this are designed to ensure that you minimise the amount of bad and poor and maximise the amount of good and excellent. So inevitably you come into a story like this from the other end of the funnel or the other end of the telescope. You come at it from the negative end with, I hope, and you will remind me, a constant caveat that this is not about everybody. This is not about everybody. But it might well be about you, particularly as a mum, particularly as a parent who has gone through the system. Even if I start off by saying why is it so bad, then I fall headlong into the trap that I've just described, isn't it? Isn't it? I mean, don't I? I say, why is it so bad? And you go, well, hang on a minute, you just told us to remember that it's not always that bad, and there are plenty of people who have very positive experiences. But we're going to come at it more or less from that angle. I what's your relationship with your own temper like? How good are you at being a squeaky wheel? You know, I think I fell into this last year, and I apologise for it, because I think it's quite misogynistic, calling people Karen if they complain about things. I mean, some of the footage that has been recorded by people who use the word Karen as a pejorative is shameful, and the people being termed Karens are behaving appallingly. But you can't just pick a woman's name and turn it into an insult, says a man who routinely uses Herbert as a description of all various ghouls and vampires working in the so-called think tank sector. But you can't do that. But how good are you at being a squeaky wheel? It's a really odd thing, because, and that's the reason why I mentioned temper. Squeaky wheels stay calm. Squeaky wheels demand better service or point out problems. I used to have quite a short temper. I'm getting better all the time, thankfully, and it's an important thing to try to do. But I still have an understanding of road rage, for example. I don't drive enough, really, to suffer from it myself, but I used to get second-hand road rage if I felt someone was disrespecting my wife in the car. And the speed, if you forgive the pun, the speed with which you go from 0 to 60... when you're suffering from road rage is extraordinary. So that capacity inside us to lose the plot does have no bearing whatsoever on your ability to be a squeaky wheel. So, for example, I'm terrified of complaining or drawing attention to myself. Well, terrified's a bit strong, but I'm very uncomfortable, even in the maternity ward, of venturing into the corridor to try to get help. And here's the reason why I think this is relevant. It's because I work on the presumption that you're all doing your best and you're all being brilliant. And that's quite naive and almost certainly wrong. So when Mrs. O'Brien was in labour the first time, we didn't have a perfect experience. And I'm afraid to tell you that I, at the time, didn't fully appreciate that. There were large and unconscionable gaps between visits. There was a failure to notice how quickly things had progressed. I won't use the word dilation on an inappropriate amount of times on the programme, but there was a failure to recognise how quickly things had progressed, which meant that my wife was in unnecessary discomfort and unnecessary pain, and she was scared of the absence of care and concern. And my job, I didn't have many jobs. Snacks, I always remember from the antenatal classes, don't forget to take snacks. Turns out they weren't meant to be for me. Pork pie, not a very welcome product in a maternity, well, not at least in the one that we were in. Delicious though. My job was to go into the corridor and find someone to come back to the ward. And I found it almost unbearably terrible. I found it almost unbearably embarrassing. Oh no, I can't do that. I do. So I suppose what I'm asking is whether or not you recognise what I'm describing. Because if you're a squeaky wheel, you find it really easy. It's probably a bit like haggling. Is it a bit like haggling? If you find haggling really easy, so things that make you uncomfortable. So you walk out into the corridor. You're looking for a nurse. So automatically you're presuming that they're not that busy anyway, and they are just choosing not to come and look after you, which seems to me, or used to seem to me, to be very unfair. The second thing you're presuming is that they're capable of dropping everything if they are busy to come and look after you, which is probably not the case. The third thing that you're presuming is that you automatically become a higher priority than all the other people on the ward, which, of course, if you're talking about your own wife, you kind of should be but shouldn't be at the same time. And the other problem you've got is not actually knowing what it is that you want. You just know that you want some, your wife wants somebody to come. So I can go from 0 to 60 if I feel that you're disrespecting my children or my wife, but I can't go into a hospital corridor and find a nurse to come and look after my wife when she feels a bit frightened and alone in a maternity ward. And the reason for that, and this is the important point, the reason for that is the presumption that these people are doing the work of the angels. The reason for that, in my case, I can't speak for you, is the presumption that they are the best of us. That people working on maternity wards have a vocation and levels of compassion and care and concern that are well above average. Now, I still believe that to be true in the first instance, right? In the first instance. But everybody, when they've done a job for a while, has to fight very, very hard not to slip away from that A game, the harder something is, it is as a daily grind, the harder it is to retain the same levels of dedication and commitment in the face of, you might have, employer lethargy or employer incompetence. You can't do the job you want to do if you haven't got enough colleagues, if you haven't got enough support. And, of course, you might become calcified. You might become a little bit crueler. You might become inured to the human condition the more you are exposed to it. You see it with journalists, particularly journalists who have to cover hideous events. They have to build a sort of, I never know quite how to pronounce this word, but I always say carapace. It can't be carapace, can it? And you have to build a sort of carapace, an armour to protect yourself from the trauma. It doesn't always work. That's how you end up with PTSD, even though you seemed fine at the time. But if you're exposed to hideousness, if you're exposed to traumatic events, you build a kind of defense mechanism that mentally minimizes the impact of what you're witnessing. And I suspect that maternity wards probably do that to people as well. The racism also is something that I am unlikely to experience, or guaranteed not to experience. The idea that a black woman in a maternity ward is going to receive worse treatment than a white woman is built on a bunch of presumptions about, for example, the physical strength of black women. The fact that we often see black girls as being much older than we would their white equivalents. You see that in Law and Order. You see that hideous story a couple of years ago about strip searching. But there's also an idea that is built in, it's complicit and it's racist, that the black woman is somehow more physically robust than a white woman and has a higher pain threshold. That's something I discovered from you. But I don't always know how you would know that was going on in a hospital setting, how you would know that was the reason that you were not receiving the help that you deserved or that you would have demanded if you didn't suffer from the sort of heebie-jeebies that I've described about having a squeaky wheel. There are stereotypes. Asian women stereotyped as princesses, with the implication that they are overly demanding or unable to cope with pain. Black women describing the opposite experience as being deemed to have tough skin and being able to tolerate pain. Muslim families describe feeling discriminated against on the basis of their religion and feeling unable to raise concerns due to fear that those discriminatory attitudes may result in poor treatment for their baby. What's going on? What's going on? And I really want to handle this sensitively, if I can. But how much, I mean, how unhelpful is it to have this image in my head of everybody in a maternity ward being on the side of the angels? So you've got, let me just hit the six things that Baroness Amos has already identified. You've got poor relationships between team members, obstetricians and midwives, perhaps, racist and bullying behaviour of senior clinicians not being dealt with by management. You've got a depletion of services because of capacity pressures, stretched antenatal wards, delivery units, meaning that they can't do what they want to do. Because there are delays in admissions and the use of community midwives in delivery units can impact safety. You have structural racism and persistent inequalities, which is not an opinion, I'm very sad to tell you, it's counting. It's a notably higher risk of adverse outcomes for women from black and Asian backgrounds and for women from more deprived areas. Discrimination against disabled women, Muslim families, refugee and asylum women, LGBT families was also reported. You can hardly be surprised by that, given that discrimination against those groups of people is a practically open season in much of our media and political class at the moment. Hideously for me, a lack of compassion and transparency when baby loss or baby harm occurs. So mothers wrongly blame themselves, which will obviously compound their trauma and impede opportunities to learn from mistakes. Most obviously, there's not enough personnel to provide safe care, and the buildings, this is item six, are often outdated and dilapidated, in some cases so badly that criminal care is compromised. And to go back to the lack of compassion and transparency when baby loss occurs, bereavement spaces are insufficient or non-existent even in some trusts. I hate one element of the question I'm about to ask you, but I think it is actually important that I ask it. with the constant caveat that huge numbers of people working in this sector are brilliant. But how much of these problems are caused by the people working on the wards? 03456060973. And also, what happened to you that makes you look at this story with a very different feeling from the one that I have? You read this headline with a grim sense of familiarity. You hear a headline that says racism and staffing issues are factors in failing maternity care. Why is maternity care failing, and how much of the responsibility lies with maternity carers? So you tell me what you think it is. Is it the buildings? Is it the people? Is it the funding? And how, if you have experienced racism in a maternity ward, how do you know it was racism? And please let me qualify that briefly. It's not something many of us do very often, okay? So how do you know that the white woman next door in the next ward wasn't being treated exactly the same, or in the next bed wasn't being treated? How do we know that these two stereotypes, the Asian woman being stereotyped as a princess, being overly demanding or unable to cope with pain, and the black woman being stereotyped as being able to tolerate more pain than a white woman or an Asian woman and having tough skin, both groups ending up more likely to have bad experiences. How do you know that that's what's going on? I hope that's not an inappropriate question, but it's a sincere one. The number you need is 03456060973. And this isn't one of those conversations that's largely about women that I'm going to confine to women, because this is when often, very often, dads are more exposed to what's going on beyond the bed than mums are, or partners. It doesn't have to be dad, but this isn't one of the conversations about women's health that I'm going to ban men from mansplaining or contributing to, because we go through as much emotional or possibly more emotional trauma than our partners do. So, but why are maternity services in this country failing? Just your thoughts.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900. At Lidl, we value all the good that value brings. But what do you value? You value the quiet victory of a school run that glides without a hitch, the lunchbox negotiations. You value filling your boot, bringing everything and everyone to the table. You value your food, real food, fresh food, quality that speaks for itself. And so do we, giving you more to value at every step, every day. Lidl, more to value.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
The Hillary sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at Hillary's.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 03456060973.
23 minutes after 10 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'm not for a moment doubting it. The numbers support the stereotyping. But how do you know when you're on the maternity ward that the reason why you're receiving suboptimal treatment is racism? But, I mean, obviously it goes without saying that plenty of white women will have had suboptimal experiences as well, because the entire system is described as failing. And that's the second part of my question. Why? What do you point at first as reasons for this failure. Rovina is in Forest Hill. Rovina, what can you tell us?
Hi, James. I've got a five-year-old now. I live in London. I chose, we're quite lucky in London. We can choose which hospital we want to have our children at. It's not really a location lottery as it is in some other parts of the UK. Go on.
How did you know I was going to interrupt you? Did I make a noise?
I was literally
saying to myself, don't interrupt her. But I just wondered, because it's a while for me. It's 18 years in April since I was in the maternity ward. Do you use, like, TripAdvisor? I mean, do you rank?
No, I work in hospitals. I have done for almost 20 years now.
Okay.
So I do have a good insight, not necessarily about maternity units, but in terms of general care in hospitals.
And like everything else, some are going to be better than others. All right, on with the story. I'll carry on.
Precisely.
With you.
Yeah. So I chose a hospital that I work in.
Okay.
Because I was very happy at that hospital, and I knew that they train their staff to a good standard. And I've had fibroids.
Okay.
Since 20s, that's when I realised it, my early 20s. And it did throw up a few complications during my pregnancy. I had to have more scans than usual.
Right.
And there came a week, I think I was about 7 months pregnant, and there came a week when I was just in absolutely debilitating pain. I have never known anything like it. Nothing relieved the pain. Nothing made it easier. There was no let up from it either. So I couldn't sleep. It wasn't like contractual pain that comes in waves. It was just a constant, almost tip of a hot knife in the side of my, yeah, it was absolutely awful.
Okay.
I tried to deal with it as best as I could myself at home.
Right.
But eventually had to go into the hospital and was taken to the maternity assessment unit.
Right. And you're not only in great pain, you're presumably quite terrified.
I'm terrified. Yes. Yeah, exactly. So obviously first thing I do is make sure the baby was okay, and she was absolutely fine.
Oh.
But then as the nurse is examining me and the midwife and asking what level of pain it is and what makes it better and what relieves it and I just very quickly hear the words that I'm a black woman. And I'm aware of stories across the world. I mean, this isn't just us locals and normal people. I mean, Serena Williams and Beyonce have also gone down to say that they've had issues in maternity care. And I heard the words that I don't know. I think we all dread to hear is like, you'll be fine. Like, you're a strong woman.
Wow.
You can handle this.
You're a strong woman. How do they? I mean, and what can that be based on if not upon your skin colour?
Or would they?
I mean, well, this is the heart of my question. How do I know they wouldn't say that to my wife? I don't think they would. Certainly, they never did.
I don't think they would either.
No.
And I have no grounds. I have no other. I don't know. There's no way of knowing that they wouldn't say
there's
that
no
to
way
a
of
white pro- woman.
They, no, you can know. But you can't prove it. You can't really prove it. I mean, you know, I'd probably get some messages now from perfectly good people, well-meaning people, saying, no, I'm white, and they said that to me as well. But it's a well-documented trope, isn't it? It's a well-known stereotype that black women are deemed as having tough skin and being able to tolerate pain. Do we know? I hope this isn't a stupid question. Do we know where that comes from? Do we know what?
I think it's probably from slavery.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's probably from slavery and the things that were put through. It's also why it's kind of historical that young girls, young black girls, are seen to be older than they are.
Yeah.
Again, because of slavery, it kind of excuses them from all the atrocities that they did to young black girls.
A subconscious cultural legacy. If you can put up with that, you can put up with this. And if you're old enough to do that kind of work, then you're old enough to be treated in certain ways by the authorities or by society. What happened? What did you do? I mean, you clearly everything went okay, but in that moment, what can you do when you're feeling anything but strong, of course?
That's the thing. And I think, um, I think another trope that is put against black women is that we are angry. So I think in those instances, I always have to try and stay calm, because if I do allow myself to feel that anger and show it, then that's another
issue.
You're
proving the stereotype.
Then I'm proving the stereotype.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and this is all during COVID, so I didn't have my husband by my side to advocate for me.
Wow.
So I had to advocate for myself, and just try and stay calm and say, you're right, I am a strong woman, but I do still feel pain.
Yes.
And this is intolerable, and I cannot cope, and I haven't been able to sleep, so I need you to help me to relieve this pain. I need you to be my healthcare advisor, yeah. Assistant, midwife,
and it did.
Eventually, it did. It's just a whole load of advocating for yourself, which is exhausting. It's another layer on top of it when you're a patient.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't expecting anyone to get their violins out, Ravina, when I was describing how tough it is for the dad to advocate in those scenarios, but it's the right word to use, and it would have taken a huge burden from your shoulders had your husband been with you. Can I ask you a tricky question? Would you mind?
No, go for it.
Given your qualifications to answer it, given what you do for a living and what you experienced on the maternity ward, but these stereotypes are... I mean, they are quite likely also to be subconsciously indulged by black nurses about other black women, do you think?
Yes, I do. I do think that. Yeah. Which is, it's hard. There are so many layers to it.
Yeah.
I think the only way around it, or to try and navigate it, is training. I think we have to be really open and honest about our own unconscious bias,
yeah.
And call it out, and train people to look differently, to change their perspective, and to look at themselves and how they judge people. It's snap judgments.
And yet, of course, there'll be a Daily Telegraph or a Daily Mail editorial being written as we speak about how dare you suggest that I suffer from unconscious bias, or how dare you suggest that I need unconscious bias training. All of the people that need it most are the people most adamant that they don't, either because they're quite comfortable with their innate prejudices or because they are too ignorant to see the problems that they cause.
Like you say, it's absolutely not just restricted to one race.
No.
All races are able to be unconsciously biased about anybody else, even people that look like themselves.
Yes, you're absolutely right, and it's an I'm glad that you thank you for answering my question so sincerely, because it is a problem that everybody should want to have fixed, and sometimes we need to be reminded of that. Rowena, thank you. 10:32 is the time. Questions continue. What happened to you is the most obvious one. How do you account for it? Why do you think it happened to you, your poor experiences in maternity services? And why are things in such an almighty mess? With the constant caveat even, that there are loads of brilliant people doing brilliant work in often very difficult circumstances right across the sector. Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
A national investigation has concluded women and babies are being failed by NHS maternity services in England. The interim report found there's a lack of kindness and compassion, as well as issues including racism and staff shortages. The number of asylum seekers being housed temporarily in hotels in the UK has fallen to the lowest level for 18 months. New Home Office figures show the total stood at just over 30,000 at the end of last year. An LBC has learned security alerts are being recorded at Britain's nuclear submarine base every 3 days. 10 times as many reports were flagged at Faslane last year compared with before Russia's invasion of Ukraine. LBC weather: rain will move across Scotland into large parts of England and Wales, staying dry in the southeast of England, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine past storybook castles or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only.
It might be cold outside, but things are really warming up at the Wren Winter Sale. With red-hot prices on our high-quality, fully-built kitchens and fitted bedrooms. Right now, there's up to 60% off fully-built kitchens and all bedroom units. Plus up to 7 years interest-free credit. Made for making you feel warm inside, whatever the weather. Wren. Made for living. Visit your nearest Wren showroom. Offers apply when you buy 5 or more kitchen units or 3 or more bedroom units. Finance subject to status and minimum spend.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Daddy? Oh, look at you, that's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Danny Dyer's Proper Deal Hotline.
Danny, I've got a leak. I'm under the sink watching a plumbing tutorial. The video's buffering.
Oh, you're in deep water there. Switch to Skyfall Fibre 150 for proper fast broadband. Watch tutorials smooth as you like.
You are a legend.
Job done. Switch to Sky Broadband for £24 a month. Sky's lowest ever price. And get up to £200 towards leaving fees.
Price will increase by £3 a month from the 1st of April 2026 and may change during 24-month minimum term. Offer ends 11th of March. Switching credit with proof of leaving fees paid. Terms apply.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 10:36 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Some very moving stories coming in via texts and, of course, as you'd expect, on the phones as well, but also some explanations, and they're important as well. Peter in Leamington Spa describes compassion fatigue. Maternity staff just suffer with compassion fatigue. Until they deal with that, the NHS will continue to perpetuate the environment where those poor families suffer. And I have, I need a little bit of help with something. I haven't put it in the correct spot yet. I'll find it in a minute. I've received a very rude message from somebody who is going to head into Idiot's Corner, but I need a little bit of help from you on how I should deal with it, because I can't deal with half of it without proving the other half of it, if you see what I mean. I'll share more shortly. Oh no, hang on, we have got it. It's here. So I've received a message that says, James, and there's a word here that I can't use. James, you are a precocious, condescending bleep. And there's no history here, so we can't click on it and find out what other little gems this character has shared with us in the past. But the problem I've got is that they obviously mean pretentious, not precocious. And yet, if I point out that you don't know what the words that you're using mean, then you could realistically describe me as condescending. I hope you would never consider me to be a bleep, but this person is too stupid to understand the insults that they're throwing at me. And when I point out that they're too stupid to understand the insults, so they've accidentally complimented me. Being precocious is generally considered to be a good thing. It means that you're ahead of your time in terms of talent. It's an odd thing to call a 54-year-old, But nevertheless, here we are. Apparently, I display all of the brilliance and genius that you would ordinarily only associate with a 55-year-old or a 56-year-old, such as my precociousness. But if I now point out how stupid this person is because they've mixed up the word precocious for the word pretentious, I sound a bit condescending, don't I? I just thought I'd share that with you so you get an insight into the burdens that I carry on your behalf every day on the programme. 10:38 is the time. Back to the phone in. David is in Nottingham. David, what made you pick up the phone?
Good morning, James.
Hello.
I'm picking up the phone as, and I'm not going to use the term harmed.
Okay.
I'm a dad from Nottingham who was part or is part of the Nottingham Maternity Inquiry.
Right.
Of a particular family group where we've had to significantly recurringly tell our stories about the individual harms that we've suffered. I've sat in front of Baroness Amos and presented arguments and data and facts as to where the maternity inquiry that she's been heading up, with support of some amazing families on the team.
Yeah.
We've been to Parliament to, again, kind of give the ground rules and the evidence of what this inquiry means and actually shout from the hills as to why the PI is the only way to answer your question, James. You know, how does this get solved?
Yes.
What does this report really mean? Use a term. We've got facts and distractions. So we've got facts of the racism side of the agenda in terms of where black mothers are perceived as being overly strong or aggressive.
Yeah.
We've got facts of negligence, which is in public domain, of what certain professionals have done in terms of harming mothers at the point of giving birth, and then the harm to children afterwards, which isn't manifested. But two things I really want to shout about is that, and I'm not saying that anybody is forgetting dads, but we are really forgotten sometimes. So if I just give you a snapshot of my journey, because I know everybody wants to talk.
No, you
so
take all partner, the, hey, hey, don't you take all the time you want, all right?
My partner at the time of pregnancy had recurring miscarriages, ectopic pregnancies, and other risks associated with pregnancy prior to actually giving birth, because that is why we'll call it. We phoned the hospital, explained the situation, high risk, and the response you get at the time, which I'm aware thousands of mothers to be have been given, oh, you're stressing too much, don't worry about it, it's normal, you don't need to come in. So when you're about to hit that joyous moment because you think you your son, your daughter is going to arrive, and you're told that it's stillborn, quickly we're kind of we've been conditioned that, you know what, it's really sad, but it's something that happens.
Right.
But through the inquiry over the years,
this is the Ockenden, you're talking about the Ockenden review.
Yeah.
Okay, just to be clear.
You learn that actually there's significant negligence that has occurred. I can't mention the name at the time due to what is occurring.
No, of course.
But the issue is systemic. And the
How did you process that discovery? And also, if you don't mind me asking, what gave you the energy to pursue this and not just to sign up for the traditional, oh, what a terrible thing has happened, it couldn't possibly have been avoided? So why did you not let it lie? I'm so sorry for your loss. And how did you process the discovery that it was something that was done to you, your family, rather than something that just happened?
If anger,
yeah.
Because when you look at where your family is at the point of that discovery, which is completely broken, which has impacted everybody, where you have a child in a mental health unit as an element of that particular issue, where you have another child that has to deal with that trauma, you're not just dealing with the trauma of your partner, you're not just dealing with the trauma of your family, that thread of pain, it affects everybody differently, but it extends right through that family.
Yeah, of course.
And then you hear the other stories. There's a mother in our group that has a stoma because somebody made a mistake. You know, birth is supposed to be the most joyous thing and the thing that actually keeps us going, and nobody's held accountable. And one of the things which our theme is, and I'm sorry if I offend anybody, is the term of dangerous people.
Yes.
So if you take Nottingham as a prime example of the NHS Trust of the last 15 to 20 years, and I call this academic genocide, proceeded over and reports which have recurringly said this place is unsafe. Safe, what is going on? There have been deaths that could have been avoided. So the government of not having a PI is protecting people, still not be sitting on a lot of the inquiries that are happening. And obviously,
just remind us, remind people listening what a PI is.
A public inquiry is ultimately what basically says, forcing you to give evidence and you need to be accountable for what happened.
Yeah.
There was a recent thing in Parliament talking about what needs to change in terms of infrastructure in the NHS to avoid these issues. If you don't take evidence from people that got it wrong, how can you change anything? And also, the data we're looking at now is old data. We've moved on. So what we need to do, and why, and the only way to stop it, is to actually make people realise you could be prosecuted. go to jail for the level of negligence you have proceeded over. And that's why the revolving door will go round and round and round, because the people in certain high places who need to avoid being held to account is going to continue. Absolutely disgusting what's happened for decades.
So there needs to be more a kind of consequence, really, and a public inquiry would deliver a much higher threshold for consequences than a mere investigation or a mere report. What did you learn, if anything, about the systemic problems that you describe? Because I presume that people don't start off bad or incompetent, but that's why we use the word systemic, that something happens systemically that reduces the level of care and concern that we would, turning up at a place like a hospital, and especially perhaps a maternity ward, that we would just expect. What have you learned anything in that space about how this has transpired?
Dangerous people protect dangerous people.
So dangerous people end up in positions, and then other people become dangerous by dint of protecting them because of a fear of institutional reputational harm.
Because you can be a consultant that gets bounced around the UK after causing harm.
Yeah, because of reputational harm, reputation protection being prioritised over patient protection. Which happens in all institutions. I mean, schools do it. Not patients, but you know, they'll sacrifice a pupil to protect the reputation of the school. You don't sound, and I hope I'm wrong, but you don't sound very optimistic about what Baroness Amos is currently undertaking.
I don't need to sound optimistic because, as I mentioned, the team in Nottingham, we do data analysis. We've got midwives, we've got consultants, we've got people from the depth of SEN. Yeah. We've got an enormous team, which actually, part of co-production, and I have to say, and apologies for saying this, Wes Streeting promised us face-to-face that families would be at the heart of the review.
Don't apologise to anyone if he hasn't delivered on it.
These would be at the heart of review. Co-production would be used extensively, because in the same way on the front line of social care, I have to listen to children, they should be listening to families who have been harmed. You don't need to bring in a consultant.
Baroness Amos says she's met with more than 400 families, presumably have experiences akin to yours, many of them.
Yes, but when you're not listening, and when you're giving tokenistic gestures of support, and when we're in meetings where people are breaking down and you haven't put the right mental health support in the team,
right,
and people are recurringly making mistakes, and when people are turning up to family meetings in 2025 and saying, actually, we now need to take a trauma-informed approach to the work, it beggars belief that you would dare even use that terminology for people that have suffered significant harm for decades.
Of course it does. I mean, we didn't dig into, or we didn't reflect much on your personal experience, more on the consequences than what actually happened, but you discovered that your child would have lived if you hadn't been told that there was no need to come into the hospital. Is that right?
St. James.
Yeah, 100%.
Let's deal with the dangerous people, and then things can change.
Well, I mean... I don't know what to say to you. You're very inspirational, and I wish you hadn't been put in a position where you had to learn those skills and those arts. I really do, but you do sound like you're an extraordinary advocate for people who may find themselves facing similar tragedies to what you and your family have been through.
Thanks.
No, thank you. It's 10:47.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
As much as it is great to give a spotlight and space for people with Tourette syndrome, you've got to be so careful about what goes on the telly or the radio as a result of doing that, haven't you? I don't think you can therefore say that you are celebrating as a broadcast in whole that individual. So the BBC is going to have upset absolutely everybody.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensified Pasta Sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato.
Whoa!
And spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensified Pasta Sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
The Hillary sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your Advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern. So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It's 10:51. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where, as you will may be aware, I haven't reminded you yet today, but the fact that there is a by-election unfolding somewhere in this country means that we are all absolutely terrified of talking about anything overtly political. Probably more terrified than we need to be, but I ain't going to risk it. So our topic selection, our story selection is informed partly by Ofcom regulations that forbid broadcasters from doing anything. Well, obviously they don't forbid broadcasters from doing anything, but that's the premise on which I operate. It's why we invented Mystery Hour. And it's why Mystery Hour always happens on Thursdays, because elections always happen on Thursdays. And that means that at least 1 hour of the programme is insulated, almost entirely insulated, from fears of accidental politicking. I have exaggerated slightly what the regulations are. Feel free to explore and research them for yourself. But I am comfortable, for once, being in the realms of, if not fake, then certainly exaggerated news. Because you know what they say, better safe than sorry. Hands up if you've ever had an Ofcom ruling against you on account of getting it wrong on an election day. Oh, it's just me then. My colleagues probably weren't even born when that happened. So sprightly and youthful is the current team. And it is also why we can probably find a little bit of room to have a little bit of fun with things like this.
Unhinged headline.
This is a doozy. Children do not belong in pubs or restaurants, so stop bringing them. Right, someone called Shauna Brown in, perhaps inevitably, either in the Daily Telegraph or on the Daily Telegraph website. So there you go. Children do not, but if you see a child in a pub, pick it up, take it outside, and phone the authorities. Ditto restaurants. God forbid that families should go to restaurants for example, Sunday lunch. Because that is, I can't be bothered to read the articles that qualify for inclusion in Unhinged Headlines, because that's the whole point of the Unhinged Headlines. They're designed to make you read the article. And I say, no, I will not read the article, because I will not fall into the cult of the
Unhinged Headline.
It is 10:53. Back to the altogether more serious business of crisis in maternity care, failure in maternity care, and indubitably racism in maternity care. Kate's in Westminster. Kate, what would you like to say?
Hi, Jane.
Hello.
Hello. I just wanted to, before I tell you my story, I just wanted to say to you that you, like, thank you. Thank you for everything you do as a broadcaster. And you're just a fair and impartial individual. Just a great, great man. Stop and it. You always speak for the underdog.
Thank you.
So thank
I try.
You.
I don't know that I always get it right, but that's very kind of you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. So I wanted to share with your listeners my story that happened to me just over a year ago. So I have a little boy, and he's now a year and a half. And my maternity care, I'm mixed race, so my partner is white. And leading up to baby being born, my maternity care as an outpatient was excellent. I really couldn't fault it. I'm in my early 40s, so I'm an old mummy. And I would like to say that, you know, having been a police officer, I know all too well about being accused of racism, etc. Yeah. And I've experienced it myself, you know, as a police officer. So, you know, I would like to say that, you know, I am quite a fair, open-minded person.
Clearly.
But my maternity care leading up to baby being induced was brilliant. I got admitted into hospital at 38 weeks. Having, because baby was on the smaller side. And yeah. Obviously, as an older mum, you're classed as high risk.
Of course.
So when I got taken into hospital, they got me started off. And then about 3 or 4 hours in, dad, my partner, was sent home because they said it was going to be quite a long process.
Right.
Then there happened to be a change of shift after they had given me the mycectomy. So now I was left on my own. The pain then started coming quite thick and fast, and it got to the point where I'd now been in the hospital a good number of hours and I hadn't been examined. I then, as the pain, you know, they hook you up to the monitor, so yeah. You can actually see that, you know, your contractions are coming, and at one point it got to like 98%, and the pain was so excruciating. And I remember at that point there was a lady opposite my bay who also had got admitted, but she'd come in after me, several hours after me.
Right.
And was behind curtains too. So at one point we were both screaming behind our curtains.
Good Lord.
But all this, and she was a white young lady, and
right.
But all the staff just kept running to her but not coming to see me, even though I had pressed my buzzer. And at one point, I actually came behind my... I shuffled off my bed and came behind the curtains to wait outside her curtains.
Wow.
To try and collar the staff for after they had dealt with her to see if they could maybe come and come and examine me and make sure that baby was okay. And as the staff came behind the curtains, I said to them that I'm in really a lot of pain. No one's come to see me for the best part of 4 hours. Can you please come and have a look now? And they were like, we'll send someone shortly. No one ever came. So I went back behind my curtains. And obviously I couldn't re-press my buzzer because my buzzer hadn't been cancelled at the nurse's bay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I then went...
So they'd sort of chalked you up as she's fine, she's making a fuss, but she's fine.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And they kept saying they were going to come and no one would come.
And they eventually never reset your buzzer, whereas the lady
buzzer
in the next bed, obviously every time they visited her, whatever they were doing, they were resetting her buzzer so she could press it again.
Right. And so what happened was an hour had passed. I then got off the bed again. And by this time, I'm in excruciating pain and I had to hold my belly up just to relieve the pressure. I then shuffled out to the nurse's bay and there was two nurses. One was messing about with the other one's hair,
yeah,
her ponytail, and I could see my buzzer behind them flashing. And I said to them, look, I'm in so much pain. Can you please, please come? Like, I'm now really, really worried. And they said, who's your midwife? And I told them.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, well, she's now gone off duty. We will send someone shortly. Again, no one came. So I went back to my...
You're still traumatised, aren't you?
I was honestly, the level of treatment that I could compare to the lady next door was far different.
And that shocked you?
It really shocked me because you hear all these stories on LBC and you do read a lot and you think, okay, like, well, I've never experienced
that.
Yeah,
yeah, of course.
But when you're in that vulnerable position where you think that your baby is in distress and you're in excruciating pain and no one's come in, you can compare the level of treatment. Eventually, it took me to have to call my partner and say, you need to get your butt to hospital now because no one's helping me. And he drove from his home in Surrey and he parked up, paid for the meter, got to the ward, and he opened the curtains. And by this time, I was bent over the bed screaming, please just get someone. And he then went straight to the nurse's bay, and I could hear him shouting, you lot in here now, because he was just like, he's a typical big burly builder.
Yeah.
And they came running, and I don't know if, my heart tells me they came running and thinking they were going to be dealing with a white patient, and it was me. Because it was the same women who were messing about with each other's hair at the nurse's station that came.
Good Lord.
And then, obviously, by this time, I could feel a lot of pressure. So they tried to stick me in a wheelchair, but I couldn't sit down because I could feel baby's head.
Yeah.
And by the time I got wheeled off to the actual delivering suite, I don't know what happened, because it was like I had an out-of-body experience. And after that, it was just, baby was born. But he was born with, like, the cord wrapped around his neck. So had I not called my partner when I did, things would have been far different. And
how terrifying.
Yeah. When women say that they get treated far different when you happen to be brown and black, it is very, very true.
And you had a healthy skepticism about that previously.
I'm a level-headed woman.
We don't want to believe the bad stuff sometimes, do we?
No, and I don't think people come into that career with bad intentions, but when they are there, they do become institutionalized, and naturally they do see black and brown women as being stronger than the average white woman.
That's quite a generous way of putting it, but it's probably the fairest as well, and it will be subconscious often as well, or always.
Yes.
Has it changed you, this experience? Has it changed the way you interact with the world? I hope not.
No, it doesn't. I've got mixed race children, and not at all.
Good.
But if I had another baby, I would definitely opt to have my baby at home. I would not put myself in that position again with having to put my baby and my life care
And how is baby?
Oh, he's brilliant. He's a typical little toddler who is just, they have too much. I'm not cut out for this energy.
I think you're doing great.
Yes, but he's brilliant. Yes.
Can I ask you a weird question?
Of course you can.
It's not that weird. Don't worry. Have you got a cousin called Tess?
No.
All right. So I just, because somebody listening is convinced that they're related to you, and that you're, because of your background in the police service, using a...
Oh, no, not me.
Well, no, that's fine. I told you it was a weird question. No doubt about that. Thank you, Kate. Well, it's a happy ending, but goodness me, it was a horrible journey to the happy ending, wasn't it? A really horrible one. And I don't think it gives, for the record, I don't think it gives Kate more credibility. But it is interesting, isn't it, that you can have a healthy scepticism about some of the things you hear from other people on this radio station, as she explicitly referenced, until it happens to you. It's 11:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a national investigation has found NHS maternity services in England are failing women and babies. The interim report has identified issues including racism, staff shortages, and a lack of kindness and compassion. This woman shared her experience last year.
I was sick up to 30 to 36 times a day. I couldn't function, but I was never believed. I was told everybody gets sick in pregnancy. Even when I was laying on a toilet floor in A&E for 6 hours, unable to get up, they still didn't believe me.
Baroness Amos's final recommendations are due to be published in the spring. A second man's been arrested by police investigating a security alert at Manchester Central Mosque. Officers were called to reports of an armed man arriving during Ramadan prayers on Tuesday night. The suspect in his 20s has been detained on suspicion of conspiracy to commit assault.
Home Office figures show 100,000 people applied for asylum in the UK in 2025, down 4% on the year before. The number of people being housed temporarily in hotels has fallen to its lowest level for 18 months. Hillary Clinton is due to give evidence later to a congressional committee about any links to Jeffrey Epstein. The former US Secretary of State says she doesn't ever recall meeting Epstein. Her husband, former President Bill Clinton, will testify tomorrow. Mr. Clinton says he cut ties with the late sex offender before his arrest. LBC has learned security alerts are being recorded at Britain's nuclear submarine base every 3 days. 10 times as many reports were flagged at Faslane last year, compared with before Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The defence analyst Philip Ingram has told us he suspects Moscow's involvement.
It could also be a clear indication of more activity being put out by Russia to try and breach the security defences of our nuclear deterrent. And that would fit completely with what Russia is trying to do in further destabilisation across Europe in what we call as the grey zone warfare, whilst it continues to fight its hot war in Ukraine.
The Ministry of Defence has declined to disclose the nature of the alerts, but says it flags every activity. And the online grocery shop Ocado has announced it's cutting up to 1,000 jobs. The roles will go in the UK and across the world. The business is looking to save around £150 million as part of a restructure. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 18 at £10,824. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, rain will move across Scotland into large parts of England and Wales by the afternoon, but staying dry in the southeast of England, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
What's the secret to feeling young? Cryo chambers? Vampire facials? Really? The real secret to feeling young is simply living young. And right now you can roll young with £500 off across the SEAT range on top of existing offers, including the fun new SEAT Ibiza and Arona. But this offer won't last forever. Order by the 31st of March. SEAT. Rolling young. UK retail customers excluding contract hire. 18 plus. Order by 31st of March and collect by 30th of June. Subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 6 minutes after 11, and I have to tell you, if you are, I opened the show today, if you were listening an hour ago, by reflecting on the fact that you're probably not listening as closely as I like to fondly imagine, and you won't necessarily have a frame of reference that is... Some people can remember more about this show than I can. I've got, you know, messages, frequent correspondence that will routinely remind me of things that I've actually forgotten, even though it was me that said them and not them. My friend Gary's particularly good at this. But I acknowledge that not everybody will know what I'm talking about, but there was a Mystery Hour answer last year, late last year, December, I think. And it turned out that the reason why the woman who provided the answer to the question, which I have inevitably forgotten, was so well qualified to provide the answer was that she was literally writing a book about the life and times of a medieval knight. And I've got some very exciting news. She received her very own Ray Liotta. I've got some very exciting news on that front coming up in today's Mystery Hour, which, all being well, we'll go ahead at 12 o'clock. And I say all being well. Is it 2 weeks running that we've dropped it? It was Andrew Windsor's fault last week. I can't remember what... Anyway, we haven't done it for... It feels like we haven't done it for ages. I haven't been away, have I? I haven't forgotten a holiday or anything like that. But there's been some very serious breaking news unfolding in recent weeks. So that I think we've only done two out of the last 4 weeks. One out of the last 4 weeks. I don't know why I just turned into Boris Johnson there. We've only done one out of the last 4 weeks, I believe, but we are intending to do it today. If you don't know what Mystery Hour is, you are in for a treat, dare I suggest. Okay, here is an Election Day special, by which I mean a phone-in that I may not do on a normal day, but on the days where Ofcom prevents us from talking about most political issues or anything that might influence events, wherever it is that a by-election is currently being held, a full list of candidates is available, lbc.co.uk. But I am going to do it today, and I'm going to do it, if you'll allow me, in a very, very personal way. I'm going to ask you why I get so angry about something. And obviously, when you answer the question, you're not just going to be talking about me. You know, me, the precocious and condescending bleep. You are also going to be talking about you. So I'm merely the conduit or the vessel through which you can articulate your own incoherent rage. Because of all the things that happen, and I take the mickey out of topics like this when other people do them, very affectionately, obviously, but getting a parking ticket can inspire epic levels of rage in people, and a sense of absolute injustice and incoherent fury. And yet, for me, listening to you talk about your rage at getting a parking ticket is even more boring than sitting in the dentist's waiting room. I mean, it is the most boring radio I think I've ever heard. And for reasons that I will leave you to speculate upon, I have heard a lot of boring radio over the years. I've probably been responsible for most of it. But it is perilously close to similar territory, with one crucial difference. I feel this rage. I feel this incoherent fury. I feel a visceral horror at what I'm about to describe to you that seems to me to be completely at odds with the actual gravity and seriousness of the situation. Okay? So I am the vessel. The question is, why do I get so disgustingly angry about this thing? Have you worked out what it is? Have I said what it is yet? I don't think I have. Have you worked out what it is? Let me have a look at my inbox and see if anybody has actually second-guessed it. 10 minutes after 11 is the time. I don't suppose I've invited you. Do I mean in... No, I don't. I mean incoherent. It's like, literally, I can't get the words in order to express myself. So what do you think it is? Should we do that first? Should we do that? Do you want to have a guess at it? And then when I ask you why it has such an emotional impact on me, you can... Well, I suppose it might be a little bit weird if you answer the question imagining what it's like to be me and you don't get any emotion. You don't get angry about it at all. I don't get angry about it at all, James, but the reason why you get so angry is dot, dot, dot. That would be a little bit weird. That would be a little bit close to psychoanalysis, wouldn't it? So I presume that we are going to be doing it more through the... method of me telling you how angry it makes me and you going, yeah, me too, I think it's because. Shall we have a little look at what it is, at what people are suggesting? It's not littering. Thank you, Chris. It's not dog poo not being picked up. That gets me, don't get me wrong, that gets my goat, but it doesn't get the full elephant or whatever it is that's got by the thing that we are about to discuss. It's not kids in pubs and restaurants, although that, I like that. That's comedic recall. That's a nice little knockback to an earlier moment in the programme. It's not the big fat cars. It's not potholes, as Mo suggests. It's not even Nigel Farage, as James suggests. Potholes coming up quite a lot. Joe suggests hemorrhoids. It's definitely not hemorrhoids, Joe. Thank you very much. Nobody has got it right yet. Bollards. I presume that that's a suggestion of what the subject matter might be rather than a response to what you're hearing on the programme. It's not that. I don't think, has anybody got it? It's not parking tickets. Stop being hilarious. It's not Jeremy Corbyn. Stop it. I thought those days were behind us. It's not people listening to music on public transport without headphones. Don't worry about that, Julie. In Dublin, I think they're going to get deported soon. It's not long. It's not Kidderminster. It's not council. It's not. No, it's none of these things. It's not Thames Water. Although people keep recommending to me the Channel 4 drama about the water scandal, the name of it, which currently eludes me, but everybody's saying it's at least as good as the Mr. Bates versus the Post Office. So we should probably talk a little bit more about that. It's not slow walkers. It's not Brexit. Don't be ridiculous. I'm very relaxed about that. It's all gone so well. It's not shoplifting. Has anyone got it right? And the producer says someone has got it right. One person. I can't find the person who's got it right. Oh, we put it in the on-air queue. Hang on. Da-da-da. Big treasure. What do you do? No, not shoplifting. Not joggers who spit. Not lit. Oh, well done, Tricia. Oh, well, you sport it now. So Tricia got it right, but she added, come on, James, aren't you about 45 years old to describe yourself as precocious? I can think of a few alternatives, though. Everyone's a meanie today. Or maybe that was not mean. So Tricia's the only one that got it right. And it's fly tipping. Okay. one in 20 incidents of fly tipping were of tipper lorry load size or greater. So I mean, I don't need to tell you what that means. That means somebody who is commercially rewarded for removing rubbish and detritus from a space is then dumping it somewhere that they are not allowed to dump it. But the number of incidents overall has reached the highest level since records began, and the massive majority involves household waste. 1.26 million incidents recorded, and that doesn't include another 100 incidents, well, 98 to be precise, of really large-scale illegal dumping that the Environment Agency has to deal with or which private landowners have to clear. An extraordinary story in the news earlier this year involving 200 tons of rubbish being strewn across a farmer's field. Fly tipped last year, months after the farmer who tends the land had turned 80 years old and shortly after his wife had died of cancer. He was told that he had to remove it himself and was due to pay £40,000 out of his own pocket before a crowdfunding operation raised the money for him. Listen, I mean, I know why I hate it, but I don't know why my response to it is so visceral and so extreme. For the avoidance of doubt, two things. I'm not remotely embarrassed by how visceral my reaction to this is. I will respond more strongly to a story like the one about the farmer than I will to a much worse crime in the newspapers. It is an irrational response, but I'm not embarrassed by it. I don't feel ashamed or embarrassed about the fact that I could read a story about a human being hurt and not feel. I'd be disgusted and compassionate and all of the things that we all try to be, but it just would not hit me in the same visceral way as these stories do. And that's the bit I don't understand. I just don't know why. I mean, it can't just be me, can it? Can it? Oh, lordy, this is going to be the world's worst phone-in if it's just me. But fly tipping, I was walking through Norfolk once, and do you know, I'd gone up a footpath, a wide footpath, like a bridle way maybe, but and it was off the road. It wasn't tarmacked, metalled. That's a question for Mystery. Why do we say that roads have been metalled? It wasn't a metalled path. It didn't have tarmac on it. It was just a very ancient, well-trodden, rural pathway wide enough to accommodate a transit van, and I literally came around a corner to a little, it would almost be a copse, that's a lovely word, isn't it, copse, almost a copse, and about one transit van load of rubbish, a couple of mattresses, bedroom furniture had just been done, so someone had driven quite carefully to a spot where they wouldn't be seen unloading the van. And they had unloaded the van in the middle of some of the most beautiful countryside in the United Kingdom. And if it's the most beautiful countryside in the United Kingdom, then I think we can all agree, apart from all the racists and weirdos on social media pretending that London is a hellhole, I think we can all agree that it is among the most beautiful countryside in the world. And somebody had driven their van full of crud. That was close. Can I say the other word on the road? Yeah, of course I do. I always talk about the four donkeys of the crapopalypse. So someone had driven their van and dumped it in a place that was going to pollute the experience of people literally seeking to commune with nature, literally seeking pleasantness. And, of course, you've got other examples as well. You get it in an urban context as well. It doesn't anger me quite as much. My neck of the woods is pretty good for this, but I've got friends who live in areas where you are likely to find a mattress on the street. Because it hasn't been cleared up by the council. This is going to be a bit of a postcode lottery. But I don't understand why the visceral emotional reaction to this particular crime, which in a sense is victimless. Now, I know it's not in another sense victimless, otherwise I'm a flipping victim of it, clearly, but it is, in a sense, it's victimless. You don't come away from an encounter with fly tipping bruised or bleeding. you don't come away traumatised, really, unless it is an extraordinary example that you're going to bring to the table by dialing 03456060973. I don't have the same response to graffiti, even if it's really bad graffiti. I quite like nice graffiti. But if it's just rubbish, if someone's scrawled their handle on a previously pristine piece of public furniture, it really gets my goat. But there's something about this particular behaviour that speaks to something inside me that I can't properly articulate, and I want to know what you think it is. Does it say something profound about society, about the direction that society is taking? I mean, oddly, you were joking when you suggested it's people listening to music on the bus or people listening to music on the tube. I wonder if they're part of a similar phenomenon, in that the thing that baffles me most when I sit on the bus, it happened to me yesterday, actually, I sit on the bus and the person behind me is watching something on a screen and very loudly and not wearing headphones. And I sit there and I find myself thinking, what absolute absence of, it's not even concern. I don't expect you to be concerned about other people on the bus. It's an absence of acknowledgement of their existence. It is as if you conceive of another human being or another group of human beings, whether they're bus passengers or walkers or neighbours, you conceive of another group of human beings and you care so little about their existence, not their sensibilities or their opinions or their emotions, their very existence, that you will behave in a way that is utterly contemptuous of their equality to you, their shared agency. So you're sitting on a bus inflicting your noise on people that don't want to listen to it. That to me is like a 4 out of 10 on the scale of whatever it is that I'm trying to describe. But fly tipping is a 10, and I want to work out why. Because you don't get hurt by it, you don't get bruised by it, you don't get injured by it, you don't get traumatized by it. It's not something that is going to blight your life unless it's on your doorstep, but for most of us it isn't. For most of us it's something you encounter. You've never been anywhere near this farmer's field. I'm not even quite sure where it is, to be honest with you, but you've never been anywhere near this farmer's field, and yet the disgust you feel at some shoddy person dumping tons, 200 tons, fridges, mattresses, children's toys, 200 tons just strewn across a field in the middle of our countryside, in the middle of Hertfordshire, no less. Thank you. It reaches parts that other antisocial behaviours cannot reach. And I want you to tell me why. Why is it that this particular behaviour is so utterly and uniquely obnoxious? 03456060973.
LBC.
At Lidl, we value all the good that value brings. But what do you value? You value the quiet victory of a school run that glides without a hitch, the lunchbox negotiations. You value filling your boot, bringing everything and everyone to the table. You value your food, real food, fresh food, quality that speaks for itself. And so do we, giving you more to value at every step, every day. Lidl, more to value.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging, or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
It's not easy being a clamp, stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
With over 50 years' experience, at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Some of the stories that are obviously much more important and much more serious than the one that we're discussing this hour, and which we could have discussed without falling foul of Ofcom regulations regarding election days. This is probably the biggest. 129 journalists and media workers killed in the course of their work in 2025. This is the latest report for the Committee to Protect Journalists, which also found that two-thirds of them were killed by Israeli forces in circumstances that almost always justify the use of the word murder. Israel culpable for two-thirds of the killing of journalists. 86 journalists, the majority of them Palestinians, reporting from Gaza. Yuck. Heartbreaking, horrifying, hideous, and of course Netanyahu's regime joins hands with Donald Trump to pretend that we have freedom of speech issues while they are routinely killing journalists on a scale that has never been seen before. Alignment with the EU is where the magic happens, says the Trade Minister Peter Kyle. Finally, a recognition of the necessity of beginning to undo the madness inflicted upon us. Here's a story that you won't be seeing in all the places that are encouraging you to hate foreigners. No migration would blow a £30 billion hole in our budget, warns the Institute of Fiscal Studies. If, as it is currently set to do, immigration hits zero soon and is sustained for a number of years, then we would have a £30 billion black hole in our public finances, which is something that nobody will be putting to Nigel Farage anytime soon, because they don't even ask him why he's turning up on a broadcaster that he claims to boycott when he turns up on the broadcaster that he claims to boycott. Tommy Tennames has been invited to the United States of America by the Trump administration. It's hard to know which crime makes him less suitable for that visit. Would it be the mortgage fraud? Would it be the immigration offences trying to get into the country using a fake passport? Would it be the conviction for assault? Or would it be the contempt of court that he was convicted of when he almost jeopardised the trial of members of a grooming gang? I don't know, but he gets involved. So there's loads of stories that you should have a much greater emotional reaction to. But today, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's the fly tipping that gets a 10 from me. Some of the others get a 10 as well, actually, but that's not irrational. This is irrational. I want to know why. Bill's in Maidenhead. Bill, what would you like to say?
Hi. Hi, hello. Can you hear me?
I can, Bill. What's going on?
Good. Well, for me, it's an 11.
Whoa! All right, for me, it's a 12.
Yeah. I am really angry on this. And because, one, violation of that which I view to be the most precious commodity amongst where I live, which is the land on which I live.
Yeah.
That violation is then somehow being ignored by authorities.
Oh, we're going to... Phone line's gone south. I don't know. I hope you haven't fallen down a hole. Abby's in Calderdale. Abby, what's going on here?
Hi, Dane.
Hello, Abby.
I'm going to be very careful, but I'm actually a local councillor.
Stop it. Stop. Sorry, carry on.
I've said I can say that.
Okay.
And this is like the biggest thing for the people where we live.
Is it?
Because
Calderdale,
A, it's
though.
Awful.
Beautiful, isn't it?
It's beautiful, yeah. A, it's awful. It's such a visceral reaction to people dumping their rubbish where we live.
I'd bring back the stocks in a heartbeat. Yeah. Bring back the stocks. Stick people in the spot and we can throw fruit and vegetables at them.
Oh, then you're fly tipping. So no.
Oh, yeah, good point. Oh, you're clever. No wonder you're a councillor. Go on.
But it's also not victimless, really.
No,
it
of
is in the way
not.
You're saying.
Yeah.
But we all pay for it with our council tax, don't we?
Yes,
so
we do.
We want it to be cleaned up. That money comes from somewhere that isn't going somewhere else. So in a very real sense, you know, it's not a victimless crime.
Why do you... I mean, Bill used the word violation, which is a good word, but why do we react to it in such a visceral way when, you know, everything costs money? You're obviously right to tell us that we have to pay for it to be cleared up, and that's an injustice, but it's not... It shouldn't really be ringing the bells at the volume that they ring whenever this subject rears its ugly head. It's doing something primal, isn't it, to us? Something almost primeval?
I think it's because it's so unfair. There's lots of things that we have to, like policing. Ideally, we wouldn't need any police, but we understand that as a society, we need policing.
Yes.
But there's no...
Yes, that's a good
dumping
answer.
A mattress in a field is not a product of living in a society or a community. It's an entirely selfish act by an individual. And it does. It's like most of us wouldn't do it. I can't imagine a situation that I would tip a fridge out the back of my car.
No,
you know,
nor can I. And that no, that you're getting really close to it, aren't you? It's that because you imagine what you need to be to do it, and then it becomes personal. You see, because even if it's not on your doorstep, if someone were to do it in the environs, for example, of the Bronte waterfall or one of the other beautiful jewels in the crown of Calderdale, that they would be personally insulting you. It feels like a personal insult because they have, we think, consciously accommodated your existence and your concerns, and then literally pooed on them.
Yeah, we don't care that you might be out walking your dog
exactly
and don't
that.
Want to see it. We don't care about anything else. And people are making a lot of money of it. Let's forget that.
Right.
Some of this is quite a big industry.
How likely is it that somebody doesn't realise that the person they're paying to take away their rubbish is dumping it in a beauty spot or dumping it in the middle of the countryside?
I think it's highly likely, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that there are ways of checking, but how much do we check, you know, because then people will dump, you know, things with people's addresses on, you know, from a house move or something, and then they'll just come after those people who have in absolute good faith paid people to collect their rubbish.
So in a way that we're finding the wrong people, although hopefully they'll still have the phone number of the person responsible, but they're not going to have a name and address, are they, or anything
not
like that?
Not necessarily.
Council status aside, could the authorities do a lot more in that? Because I can't help thinking, you know, I'd appoint a czar. They've got czars for everything else at the moment. Appoint a flight tipping czar and just nail it. Work it out. As soon as it appears, you ring a number, someone turns up, rifles through it, finds some evidence, hit the local CCTV, get on the AP, what's it called, the APNRs, just find the people, because the vehicles are going to be used again and again. They're not going to be dumped on the spot. Find the people responsible, stick them all over the news, put them on local social media, and then obviously you can't put them in the stocks because that would involve more fly tipping. And just do more, or am I sounding a bit like the kind of people that make your life a misery by writing you letters in green ink?
No, this is the nicest kind of thing that I've had in a long time. They are doing more. There is new legislation where we can charge people, fine people more, and that's working its way through, so that's having an effect. Our local communities are fantastic at, you know, grassing on people, for want of a better word, and they will, you know, take pictures of number plates and things, and that helps. So I think, in a funny way, the angrier people are, the easier it is to enforce. Because if we are getting lots and lots of phone calls and emails and letters in green ink, then we have a case to say we need to sort this out. So the anger really helps. And it galvanises communities to do things, because it is communities this is happening in, you know.
Yeah. So you'll know more about this than I do, but there is now new guidance for local authorities, including the seizing and crushing of vehicles used to do it. And indeed, I didn't realise it's the naming and shaming of culprits by councils on social media. I'd never, ever, ever do this. But there is a little bit of me of wondering whether we can help, whether we can galvanise the massive army of listeners to this programme and just do something about it. Because of all the things in all the world... You had to walk into this one. Oh, sorry, wrong film. Of all the things in all the world that you sort of feel that, as Abby's just beautifully portrayed, that community is the answer to the problem. This feels like one of the biggest, doesn't it? It's 11:32. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
National investigation has found NHS maternity services in England are failing women and babies. The interim report identified issues including racism, staff shortages and a lack of kindness and compassion. A second man's been arrested by police investigating a security alert at Manchester Central Mosque. Officers were called to reports of an armed man arriving during Ramadan prayers on Tuesday evening. And Home Office figures show 100,000 people applied for asylum in the UK in 2025. That's down 4% on the year before. The number of people being housed temporarily in hotels has fallen to its lowest level for 18 years.
18 months. LBC weather, rain moving across Scotland into large parts of England and Wales. Staying dry, though, in the southeast of England, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, stop working. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
Get 3 months half price when you switch to an unlimited SIM with Three. That means quick streaming, faster downloads, and more money to spend on the things you love. Join the UK's fastest 5G network and get your unlimited SIM today. Buy now in store or see 3.co.uk.
Unlimited 24-month light plan. Proof of switching required. Based on Ookla Speed Test Intelligence data 2H 2025. All rights reserved. Subject to credit checks and terms.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern.
At Lidl, we value all the good that value brings. But what do you value? You value the quiet victory of a school run that glides without a hitch, the lunchbox negotiations. You value filling your boot, bringing everything and everyone to the table. You value your food, real food, fresh food, quality that speaks for itself. And so do we, giving you more to value at every step, every day. Lidl, more to value.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It's 25 to 12 from Calderdale to Croydon. So from the beauteous English countryside to, you know, the built-up South London. Croydon's the worst in the country, apparently. 145 incidents a day of fly-tipping, costing a council that's already skint about £1 million a year to clear up. I never know how they work these figures out because, you know, some members of staff are on a salary that they would be paid regardless of what they were actually doing that day. But £1 million a year to clear up 53,268 incidents sounds like a bargain. But as Abby reminders, the councillor from Calderdale. Sounds like a character in an Alan Bennett play, doesn't it? The councillor from Calderdale. As she reminded us, this costs money. This is our money that will go on this. Why does it get... I'm glad we got Bill in Maidenhead back on the line, because you were beginning to sound quite lyrical, Bill, in your horror at what why, on a human level, do we find it so extraordinarily upsetting and angering?
Well, I think for anybody who was paying attention to these awful news reports, I think it's simply because we all together, regardless of all of our persuasions, value the beauty of the countryside in which we live. And it really is quite extraordinary, this island on which we live.
Yes, you're right.
And I have been really banging on about that for 45 years since I've been here. And to these monster dumps that have suddenly appeared like they would have been overnight. There's just no way they were done overnight. They were done over days, if not weeks.
They must scope places out. This poor bloke in Hertfordshire, they must have scoped out the fact that no one was really walking through those fields, or the bloke who owned them was busy. A poor bloke was 80 and he just buried his wife. They must have just clocked that they could do it, and there was nothing in place to stop them. I mean, I'm reluctant to blame...
The area,
go on.
the first one, the big monster.
Yeah.
It was mixed up with the fact that it was on royal land of some sort.
Okay.
And so listening to your solution, and I think you're on the right track with solutions, that is an army of people. And there's lots of armies out there cleaning up what the council doesn't clean up along motorways.
Imagine if people had been doing this instead of putting up tatty flags made out of polyester on all the bloody lampposts in some poor benighted towns. This would have been a wonderful act of public service, duty, patriotism. But they wouldn't have been able to raise money for it on Facebook, I suppose.
Depressing thing is it makes us think that perhaps people are blasé about the beauty of the land which we're blessed with.
Yes.
And it really is special. And so the violation, and we all pick stuff up when we're walkers. I'm a walker. We pick stuff up. But these monster dumps, it's what the hell is going on with these so-called enforcement agencies who get $145 a month or whatever they're getting?
Mm.
What the heck is going on, James?
$142 a day, according to the Liberal Democrat spokesman on this. So it's obviously big business. It's obviously become a very profitable way for criminals to raise funds, to make money.
And what is the complication for dealing with it? Is it because of, I know there's money enticing. Is it because councils are charging too much? It may be a quite intractable problem, which is quite depressing.
Yeah, it is. And the simplest thing to address, as we've both acknowledged, is that they're not frightened enough of being caught. They're not frightened enough of what will happen where they are caught. The cost and the risk of doing business is not currently high enough for them. So, you know, it needs to be exorbitant. And that's why I'm interested in the rational angle of this conversation, which you've made a brilliant contribution to, because what you're essentially saying is that the punishment for doing something like this should be higher than the punishment for doing something which costs the same to the victim or costs the same to society. There is something, it's where the law is not a robot. It reflects humanity. The law should punish these people more than it punishes people who are making illegal profits in a different area that doesn't offend the sensibilities of so many so profoundly. And I don't know whether you can justify that in law. I genuinely don't. I suppose it's a political question. Bill, great stuff. Thank you. Steve is in Aberdawa. Steve, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello, mate.
I suffer from OCD.
Okay.
And it's been diagnosed through anxiety.
Yes.
And fly tipping, it puts me right over the top, like, you know.
Oh, does it? I'm sorry
to hear
that.
It just, you know, my wife says to me, she can calm me down, but it really does. I don't know why people do it.
No.
It's got to the stage where, and the OCD, I think, is one of the things that kicks it off, because I like order in my life, you know, and I mean, if I see a cigarette packet or some of the rubbish on the floor out in the street, I'll pick it up.
But
yeah. You know, and it's like people with McDonald's bags, they put all the rubbish in a bag and then chuck it out the window, you know.
And that drives you even more.
It just puts me right over the top.
For people who don't understand OCD, just a quick word, if you would, on can you describe what would happen or what you would feel if you didn't pick it up?
I would feel guilty.
Right.
I feel a guilt to my fellow men and women in the country, you know, because I've seen it lying there. I've been in Tesco's car park, people with scratch cards throwing them out the window.
Yeah.
Because they're losers. And I went up and picked them up and says, "You've dropped your scratch cards." They're losers.
Yeah.
Can you put them in the bucket? Can I put them? I just threw them in the car and walked away.
Well, I'm glad, but this is what your wife is worried about, isn't she? Is it you get your temper getting you into a bit of bother, I imagine?
You know, it's like when I go on holiday, I've got to have... Oh, that's, you know, now she's sort of, I've controlled it. I went and spoke to a beautiful young lady who's 3 hours at one afternoon explaining everything. And the thing was, her maiden name was my wife's maiden name.
Oh.
Burnett, you know. And any time I have OCD or anyway, I immediately refer back to that. And I know that you suffered, you went and got help, I went and got help, you know.
Yeah.
Another strange thing is, we both like bridges, and we're both like cranes.
There's nothing strange about that at all. Everyone else is strange, Steve. Everyone who doesn't like bridges and cranes and recognise the benefit of professional support. It's God blimey, and it just speaks to something so vile on the part of the people doing it. And at the entry level would be tossing something out of your car window, and it leads on the graph to people emptying blooming great tipper trucks in the middle of the countryside.
I've pulled up a few people for throwing stuff out and dropping litter, and I'm a big strapping laddie, or I was, you know, I'm old now, but I was a blacksmith to trade. And
good Lord, really? You don't meet many blacksmiths these days.
No, you do not.
But I mean, that's the definition of who you wouldn't want to mess with, isn't it?
People used to say to me, oh, do you go to the gym every day? I said, I've never been in a gym in my life.
What was the bulk of your work then? Because it wouldn't be shoeing horses, would it?
I worked in a local smiddy for a time, and basically the horses, the hunters used to come in on a Saturday morning and get them cleaned and shoed, and we used to put steel tyres on carriage wheels,
because
they're right on the A71 between Edinburgh and East Calder, where I stayed. And, you know, kids used to come in with their roller skates or skateboards, you know, and get them oiled and tighten up.
That's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Well, the opposite, if you like, are the kind of people that we're talking about. Somebody supporting community and recognising the togetherness of a population, instead of this thing that they do, which is the subconscious contempt. I think that's part of it. Nobody wants to be held in contempt. Well, except by hideous people, in which case it can become a badge of honour. But some complete stranger is treating you like a mug. They're treating you like a sucker. They're treating you like they're tossing their stuff out of their car, or they're dumping stuff in the middle of the countryside. It's like, I'm not going to do it because it'll get clipped up if I do it on YouTube. But it's like they're flicking the finger at you, isn't it? It's like they're just, oh yeah, well you can bog off, and that bridles. But that's only part of it, because that's the personal. It's also the public. There's also the insult that's been inflicted upon all of us. You know, Steve and I have never met in person, despite our shared love of bridges and cranes. But there's a sense of fellowship here. It's us versus them. It's people that give a monkeys about each other, and people who clearly and categorically don't.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
New initiative started now to deliver on the national target to halve long-term rough sleeping by the end of this parliament. Local Government and Homelessness Minister Alison McGovern joins us now. What is the estimated number of homeless people in the country at the moment?
So if we measure the number of people who are presenting themselves to local authorities, then it's about 80,000, just under 80,000.
I mean, your number of 80,000, Minister, is in stark contrast to what shelters say.
I don't know the latest shelter figure.
You and your colleagues want to solve this crisis, and you don't have an idea how big the crisis is.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast, back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you, that's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. Helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
With over 50 years' experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service, and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Forecasting sun with 100% chance of beach. There's not long left to get up to £500 off package holidays in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale. Plus get up to 20% off flights. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights sail on 3rd of March. Holidays min spend and at all protected. T's and C's apply.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties, mess, tantrums and sleepless nights, all those yo-yos, action figures and shinies, lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 11:48. Similar. I don't know whether or not it's a consequence of Unhinged headline or whether or not people have arrived at these conclusions independently, but the creative director of the New World newspaper, which I used to be the New European, and I've recommended it to you on several occasions, it's such a good read. It's a really great blend of nourishment and entertainment. You know, you'll chuckle reading it, and there'll be bits that you really, really enjoy on quite a light level, levity level, and then there'll be bits that you really have to get your teeth into and which convey really important stuff. Brilliant team over at the New World. But Martin Nichols is the creative director, and he's invented the Alistair Heath headline generator. I've only just seen it on Blue Sky, and I've shared it, if you follow me on there, at Mr. James O'B. In honour of the Sunday Telegraph's editor and official Maddist columnist, he is also the patron saint of Unhinged headlines. You can now just enter in a subject matter and the generator will give you your very own headline, which is an example. The civil service, the problem with things like this is that the line between parody and reality becomes tissue thin. So if I said to you, Alistair Heath has written an article for the Daily Telegraph, in fact, let's do it properly, Nate, shall we? Should we do this properly? So if I said to you, oh, now time for another episode of
Unhinged headline.
And it's Alistair Heath writing in the Daily Telegraph again. And here's the latest one. The civil service blob is using Blue Sky to stage a Marxist coup. And I said to you, real or generated by the parody headline generator? Hand on heart, what would you say? If you didn't know that this was a little introduction by me to you of the parody headline generator, that would go as real, right? You say, would Alistair Heath write an article under the headline, "The civil service blob is using Blue Sky to stage a Marxist coup"? Yes, James. Yes, he would. He quite possibly has, although this is one that has been generated by the generator. Here's another one from the architect of the technology himself. Let's do it properly again, then.
Unhinged headline.
The awful truth about the Alistair Heath headline generator is now too monstrous to hide. Now, you know that one's a parody. Or is it? Yes, you would know that one was a parody. But go on, go and do your own. And feel free to share the results. It's 11:51. Steve is in Croydon, which is reportedly the worst borough in the country for this particular blight. So why does it boil our blood so completely, do we think, Steve? What would you like to say?
Yeah, you're right, James. It has been reported that Croydon is the worst place in the country. And
just before I get any letters, yeah, just sure. For fly tipping, all right? No one is just for.
Sorry. Just for fly tipping, nothing else. Yes. I know we've had some bad, hits recently,
yes.
But fly tipping. In terms of the Grammys, by the way, Croydon did very well because three artists from Croydon came from. Two artists that won the Grammys came from Croydon, by the way.
Look
so
at that.
We are doing things right.
There we go.
But with regards to fly tipping, we all hate it because it's like rubbish that should not be there.
Yes.
But what I propose, and this is a work in progress, is what I call the ABC approach.
Oh, yes.
Now, the A is all of us. We all have a responsibility for our waste. During the spring, summer, that's when it rises because people are doing refurbs and such like, and
right.
They've got all this rubbish. Now, one of the things I propose to my council is that we show what licences look like. Now, a lot of people know that you need a reference, license to remove your waste, you know, license.
Yes.
But what does it actually look like? So by seeing it, or someone comes to your house to say they're moving their rubbish, they need to show you their licence. right?
Yeah.
So you'll have an idea what the license looked like. You can take a photograph of that license.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. The residents taking power, because these people can't activate or can't operate without our rubbish.
You're absolutely right.
There's no business model.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
like it.
So the B space, right? And I can't go into too much details because this works with the police, right?
All right. Go on.
So,
Are you just a punter who's just having
I'm just a punter.
But I mean,
punter.
Have you had any contact with anybody, or are you just dropping this from space into the middle
no,
of the program?
No, no, no. What it is, right? I tell you where it kind of came from, right? Just down the road from me, just there was a pub, one of many that have gone under.
Yeah.
And it had a big car park.
Right.
And I got called by a neighbour because I like to be proactive in my community, try to do the right things and help
Good
people where I can.
Good for you.
And I went down there because they called me because somebody was dumping rubbish.
Right.
I went down there and there was a community, let's call it that, there.
Yeah.
And a lorry came in, or a truck came in, and he was about to enter the rubbish. And I said to him, you can't enter the rubbish there. He goes, yeah. Why not? And I said to him, look, it's not right. And he said, oh, everyone's against us. We can't get work. We can't do this. And I said, but it still doesn't make it right. Anyway, he then got angry because you get the first... instance you get is anger, and they want to come at you with venom, right? So I managed to try and calm that down. He came with an item, and I don't advocate anyone doing what I did.
Oh.
But like Liam Neeson, I've got special skills.
Okay.
Okay?
Do you have a unique set of skills? Okay,
right?
Carry on.
So he came with me with this venom. And
have we cleared this with the producer? Is the producer aware of what you're about? Okay, so never mind. Carry on.
I'm not going to go into my unique skills,
Good.
But they are there.
All right.
But then we started talking, and in the end, he got emotional because he realised what he doing was wrong,
well.
And he did not dump the rubbish. He said, "Okay, I'm not going to do it," and then they all left, and literally they all. Packed up their trailers and left.
So there was a queue, was there, of people?
Well, there was a group of people there that some were on site.
Yeah.
And some were bringing stuff in. So there was two trucks that actually came to dump the rubbish in the car park.
Flipping heck.
Yeah.
And he didn't fully appreciate how obnoxious his planned behaviour was until you persuasively told him.
It was clearly something that they were doing, and that's where he was saying that's the way he was getting funds, his income, So
I
could see, that he said, if I don't do this,
can't feed my children. Can't feed my children.
Yeah.
And has that car park remained uncovered?
So what happened was that once it was done, it was cleared up by the owners because it was disused because obviously it's shut down.
Right. But this is what is happening is it's like a sort of, I don't know, like they're identifying a spot and then they'll fill it till there's nothing left to fill. So I love the A. All of us, and the idea, very simply, you shouldn't even have to look it up online, but you turn up with something that you can see, and then you can check online that it's the real deal, the real McCoy. So you will not pay anyone to take your rubbish away unless they've proved to you that they have the legal right to take your rubbish away. B, what was B again?
B is the space where the police can occupy, because
right.
to move it from A to C, where they dump it, you've got to go through B, right? So that's the road, right?
So the police are looking for the lorries?
Right, but also what happens with the lorries, a lot of them go under false license plates.
This is fantastic. Carry on. Go on. Do you have a uniform? Do you wear a special
uniform?
Do you have a cape?
Uniform.
Do you have a cape?
No.
All right, carry on.
As I said, I've got unique skills.
You clearly do.
What they do, they Velcros the false plate on top of the original one.
Seriously?
Yeah, that's how they get around it.
You live and learn. So it's no good catching them on a camera or anything like that.
No,
this is a planned operation.
Yeah, because it's all planned. Yeah, it's organised in that extent. So what I'm attempting, and I say attempting, going to do to occupy that B space a lot more, especially during the summer, spring and summer, as I said. That's when people are doing their work.
Yeah,
clearing out the house and spring cleaning and all that sort of stuff. So... And then the C space is down to the council to provide that information to the residents, to say, this is what we're doing, this is what you should look out for, and this is what we're doing to clear
up. This is all feasible, isn't it? And then, it's on the road, spot checks. You just regularly get people being pulled over to prove that they're allowed to be in the car that they're in. I don't know how hard it would be, particularly on routes that are known to be frequented by these scumbags. You just pull over every lorry that you see for a couple of minutes.
And, Yeah, yeah, and because the thing is, once it gets to that sea space, the police can't do anything because it normally goes on private land or,
right.
or like you said, the park, the pub car park, which the owner then has to clean up.
Because if it's not municipal land, then it's not a matter for the police.
It's not a matter for the police.
I didn't realise that.
Yeah. So the police are, have to operate intensively in that V space, whether it's the you know, lorries with false number plates on, whether it's checking that they've got the valid licences, that kind of thing, because they can operate in that space.
And very easily done. Well, not easily, but certainly feasibly done, if not easily done. And are you in contact with the authorities in Croydon?
I am. Because
I had a feeling you might be.
James, I'm trying to do a lot of community engagement projects, mainly with young people, but, you know, basically for the community. Because that's who we are. We're all together, aren't we?
Yeah. I can't say anything political, but this is what community sounds like to me. This is actually what patriotism sounds like to me, caring for your fellow humans and caring for these spaces that you share.
And if everyone
had a neighbour like you, Steve, the country would be a much, much happier place.
Well, I think so, James, as well. No, but no, I mean, as I said, thank you. But everyone does it. It's, you know, we shout a lot, you know, as I said, we could complain a lot, but do we do a lot? Do we kind of link up with our fellow, you know, community members and say, what can we do about this? Or how can we approach it? Come up with some ideas. Not all going to work. They're not all going to be brilliant, but come up with something rather than just complaining.
Have we got the round of applause ready for Mr. Howard? Let's just wait there a second, Steve. I think it's the least I can give you, to be honest. Lovely work. Best call of the week. Fantastic. What a guy. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, mate, for everything you do, clearly. It's almost... The estate agents at Croydon should get him on posters. He's a reason to move to the area. I think we might have a winner on the Alistair Heath headline generator. This has come in from Graham. How James O'Brien became the ultimate symbol of Britain's humiliating global irrelevance. I think they've run that story. It was the Telegraph or the Spectator. One of them did that last year, didn't they? How James O'Brien became the ultimate symbol of Britain's humiliating global irrelevance. Maybe I dreamt it. I didn't dream this. It's the first Mystery Hour in what feels like a while, although we've had a bit of a chat, and the producer insists that you're all wrong when you say we've missed loads lately, and that she's right, which is usually the case. So anyway, the first in a fortnight. We didn't do it last week. We are doing it this week. If you don't know what it is, you're in for a treat. Find out what that treat looks like or sounds like after this.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, a damning review has found a reluctance to admit mistakes is contributing to failures in England's maternity services. The investigation identified issues including staff shortages, racism and a general lack of kindness. Sarah Hawkins' baby was stillborn. She wants more accountability when things go wrong.
Some form of justice, because if your child died in any other circumstance in life, you would get justice. People would be held to account. Yet in maternity services, it doesn't happen like that, and that is so unfair.
The government has promised to act on the final recommendations when they're published in April. A law to allow terminally ill adults the right to choose to end their own lives has been approved in Jersey. It marks the final legislative stage for the landmark proposals before they get royal assent in the UK. The move means Jersey is now the second part of the British Isles where assisted dying has been fully approved after the Isle of Man. A second man's been arrested by police investigating a security alert at Manchester Central Mosque. Officers were called to reports of an armed man arriving during Ramadan prayers on Tuesday evening. The suspect in his 20s has been detained on suspicion of conspiracy to commit assault. The number of asylum seekers being housed temporarily in hotels in the UK has fallen to the lowest level for 18 months. Home Office figures out today, so the total stood at just over 30,000 at the end of last year. There were 10 times as many security incidents at Britain's nuclear submarine base last year compared with before Russia's invasion of Ukraine. LBC has learned 149 were recorded at Faslane by the MOD, which won't disclose the reasons behind them. General Sir Patrick Sanders is the former head of the British Army. He's told us that he suspects it's evidence of increasingly hybrid warfare attacks by Moscow.
I think the one thing that you can be absolutely certain of is that when we look at the threat that Russia poses to Europe, whether that is around attacks on critical national infrastructure, on undersea cables, cyber attacks, we're going to experience that at a much greater scale and intensity than we have.
I'll bring you some breaking news this hour. LBC's hearing that the Selwyn murderer Ian Huntley has been seriously assaulted in prison this morning. We'll bring you more on this story as we get it. And there's been a rise in the number of young people not in employment, education or training. Official figures suggest the number rose to almost a million in the final 3 months of last year. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 11 at 10,818. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, rain moving across Scotland into large parts of England and Wales throughout the day. Staying dry, though, in the southeast of England, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working, offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Is it that time of year already? Good Lord. Or even of the week. Your weekly opportunity under normal circumstances, if the police aren't arresting for members of the royal family or the Prime Minister isn't delivering an important speech, then this is your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. The way it works is very, very straightforward. But what happens somehow in between, in the margins, can be, on occasion, quite magical. And what happens in the margins is that you hear somebody else ask a question and you ring in and answer it. So you can ring in with a question, 0345 6060973. James, why do we do that? James, what is the reason for this? What's the origin of that? Who? You know when you do it, then what? Who? Why? What? When? Whether? Whither? Wherefore? Whence? Any other interrogative pronouns? No. And then you can ring in with the answer. Guess what? It's the same number. 0345 6060973. You know how my brain works. I now want to make a list of interrogative pronouns and see if I've missed any out. All the was, the whys, the whats, the wherefores, the withers, the whences, the wheres. Go on, send me yours. I have to begin with W, otherwise I'm not interested. If you submit my favourite contribution of the week, and it can be either a question or an answer. It has to be on the phones. We don't generally take questions via text, including the 30,000 people who are getting ready to ask me why elections happen on Thursdays. We take questions only via phones. But if you make my favourite submission of the week, then you will win a Mystery Hour game. And I need to double check, actually, with the excellent people over at Big Sky Games. But as things stand, you can have either the original board game or the bang up to date travel edition, which comes in a tin. And last week, or the week before actually, because we didn't do it last week, I remembered to bring one in with me so that I could shake it at this point and say to you it's in a tin, but I forgot it. So I'm going to improvise with an empty pot of ginger shot and a biro. So it's in a tin. Did that sound like that? Didn't sound. No. Okay. Sorry. Anyway, my favourite contributor of the week will win a Mystery Hour game, and you can choose for yourself whether you want the sort of family edition or the travel edition. The travel edition is probably funnier, as in what you get in the box, but the family edition possibly lends itself to you being funnier. So the travel edition makes the jokes, and the family edition leaves you an opportunity to make the jokes. Do you think it's worth, the producer wants to know, do you want us to get a clip of the sound of you shaking the tin? I'm just going to have a little chat with my team. Is it worth it, do you think? What do you reckon? I think this sounds ridiculous. I can't do this again. And I know it doesn't even sound like it. It sounds like a weird bloke hitting a little empty plastic bottle with a biro. There's no call for that, is there? No one's ever going to clip this up and use it again as a sound effect, are they? So I don't know. I mean, maybe if it's not too difficult. But the phones are about to go bonkers, so you're only making a rod for your own back, Eleanor. It's 7 minutes after 12. You're listening to Mystery Hour with James O'Brien on LBC. You have no rules, really. The only rules were, used to be, that no repetition, so don't ask a question that we've dealt with relatively recently, but I gave up on that rule years ago because I can't remember what I had for breakfast, let alone what we did on the programme 6 months ago. And the other rule was no motoring questions, and I still quite like that rule because motoring topics on the radio are, by definition, incredibly boring. Almost always, and that almost just gets me, man. That almost always, because you know and I know that somewhere, somehow, someplace, there's a motoring topic or a motoring question that is actually quite interesting. But don't ring in with motoring questions. 03456060973 is the number you mustn't use if you've got a motoring question. But it's the number that you need if you have a question that you think someone will know an answer to, but you're dashed if you know what it is, or indeed if you hear somebody else ask a question in the course of the next 50 or so minutes and you do know the answer to it, OK? 03456060973. Alistair has been in touch rather unhelpfully to say, I sell games in tins, and that definitely did not sound like a tin being shaken. All right. I mean, crikey. If I hadn't told you, you wouldn't have known, would you? It's only because I give too much away. And do not let me go home without sharing the magnificent news about Sandy from Redditch, who got in touch towards the end of last year to answer a question, and she won a Ray Liotta. Do you know what that means? No, you may not. If you're new to the programme, a Ray Liotta, as in the late, great Hollywood actor, is what we award people if they provide an answer that demands qualifications almost unbelievably relevant to the question that they're answering. So, you know, if there was a question about toasters and you invented the toaster, then you would get a Ray Liotta. In Sandy's case, it was a question about medieval knights. I don't know whether or not you remember it, but I've got an exciting update for you from the world of Sandy in Redditch and medieval knights coming up later this hour. Do not let me forget, all right? Shall we get on with it? God, yes. Yes, please. Gregor is in Kilburnie. Gregor, question or answer?
Hello, James. Oh. I have an interrogative of three W's for you.
Go on.
Which are www dots.
Right.
I would like to know where all the W's are disappearing to. It used to be the case that you had to have a www dot in front of every website, but one by one, they're all disappearing. And I checked my own website the other day, and it's gone as well. And I would like to know why.
So you have your own website?
And company website, and at some point the www disappeared.
Because we all used to say it, didn't we? If I'd be doing it on the radio, go, the full terms and conditions are available at www.lbc.co.uk, and I haven't done that for years.
Yeah.
Oh, do you know, don't take offence, but I thought when I saw the bare bones of what your question was going to be on the screen in front of me, my heart sank. I thought, oh, this is a boring one to start with. But it's actually really interesting. So my apologies to you for the offence I caused you without you knowing that I'd been offensive.
It's all right, James. I'm used to it.
No, that would be me too. WWW. Why and when? When and why did it become unnecessary? Why? I mean, asking where they've gone is a bit daft, isn't it, really? They're not gone anywhere. It's not like there's a cellar somewhere full of redundant W's. But why did it... It used to be de rigueur, and now it's utterly obsolete. I like that. Great question. Great work. Thanks, Gregor. 03456060973 if you know the answer to that one. 11 minutes after 12 is the time. Andy's in Brighton. Andy, question or answer?
James. It's a question.
Carry on, mate. Good man.
Right. You may know this. I know you were in menswear once. I've watched some old...
Just for people who are new to the programme, he means I used to sell suits. I was never in the band. Carry on.
I know from some old war films...
Yes.
...that I think it might just be the Nazis, but I'm not sure of that.
I never kitted out any Nazis when I was working at Aquascutum on Regent Street in the 1990s. Carry on. Well, not knowingly, anyway.
I think it might just be the Nazis, but it could be the Allies as well. In the men's uniforms, the trousers have these weird kind of... I can't describe them in any other way than, like, wings in the thighs.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
What are they? What are they called? Why are they there? What function do they... I know I'm only allowed one question, but they're all linked. What's that about?
So, for people who haven't got a mental image of what you're describing, it probably has as much to do with what is below the knee as what is above the knee. So below the knee would be quite tight.
Yes.
And above the knee would be billowing, effectively. It would be quite billowing.
Yeah.
Like a Knickerbocker.
If you like.
Sort of. And we see it. Well, I don't think it's confined to Nazis. I got an image of airmen, British airmen maybe wearing something similar as well, but I could be imagining it. But okay. It's a trouser that is very blouson.
Well, it's got a protuberance.
It's a protuberance. It's a blouson at the top, and then it stops at roughly the knee. The blouson.
Yes, exactly.
I love that word.
They seem quite rigid.
Do they?
To me, that's what they've looked like on screen. So, I don't know if it's an insert or what.
Well, you mean like a kind of cage inside the thigh?
Why on earth would they do that? Surely that's going to inhibit the movement and the comfort.
I don't know that they're going to be a sort of corsetry type scenario or a cage. It could just be a lot of starch but I don't know. I can picture if anyone's got a picture, well, that's the radio. I'm about to say, if anyone's got a picture of it, send it to me and I'll tell everyone about it. But it's a blooming picture. We can describe it what we're describing without actually describing a picture because we're using the mental images that we have. But what is going on? The baggy thighs, they're called. The baggy thighs. And it stops. That's crucially the thighs. It's not baggy trousers. That's madness. It's baggy thighs. I like that question. I'll try and get you an answer. Thank you, Andy. 12:13, Steve's in Barnsley. Steve, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James. How are you?
Very well, Steve. What's it going to be?
Good, good. I've got a question, and I've got an amusing story about www.
No.
Can I do both?
No.
It's a very short story,
no.
I promise.
No.
Okay, just a question then.
No, I'm sorry, but you can't come on this show without having gone through the gatekeeper.
Oh, no, I've gone through the gatekeeping for the question.
Yeah, but you didn't clear the amusing anecdote. I'm also very wary of people who describe their own anecdotes as amusing.
Oh, no, it's someone else's. I can't take the credit for it.
But I can't let it happen. If you'd asked Eleanor and she'd said yes, then you could have done it, but you didn't, so you can't. Sorry.
You're the boss, James. Nothing You're to the boss.
No, I'm not. That's the point. I'm not the boss. I can't make autonomous decisions like this. I has to have been cleared with Eleanor. Otherwise, who knows what hellish consequences you may bring down upon my lily-white pate. Carry on, Steve.
It's nothing to do with elections.
Carry on.
Ah,
you say that, don't you, now? Yeah. Go on. Back to what was the question?
Why, when you kick a ball through someone's legs, it's called a nutmeg?
Oh, I knew this. Didn't I know this? I think I've looked this up quite recently.
I was watching the Newcastle game at the beginning of the week with my 16-year-old, and he asked, and I was like, I don't know, but I'll ask James. Who's James?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
That's the only acceptable response to that. Complete flyer, okay? And no way I'm taking a round of applause for it. But spices, right? Very expensive. Back in the day, go back to the 19th century, and it was quite... between you and me, Steve, and no one else is listening, did you ever, for example, buy a lump of licorice outside a nightclub in Barnsley in the 1980s and then got home to discover it wasn't what you thought that you were actually buying?
Well, I only moved up here about 4 years ago.
I should have been able to clock that from your accent. All right, but
I'm not a fan of licorice, so
okay.
No.
So substances are often sold under false pretenses, never more so than spices during the heyday of the spice trade. So I wonder whether people would sell fake nutmeg in the 19th century, and therefore being nutmegged became a byword for being swindled or bamboozled. And then it becomes the phrase that is used for knocking a football through the legs of an opposing player, because you're bamboozling them. I'm not taking a round of applause for that. I'm just sowing the seed, Steve, of possibility in your bulbous brain.
And I'm happy to accept that seed, but...
Send the actress to the bishop.
Goodness gracious.
But you're not going to take it as an answer.
No, because I don't think it really relates to football.
No, but it would just have to be a synonym for conning or swindling. But we will find out. It's on the board. So we've got www. We've got trousers, or perhaps more accurately, jodhpurs. Do they sound? I don't know. I think a jodhpur these days is quite tight all the way down from thigh to knee. And then we've got Steve's nutmegs. It is 12:16.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
People are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
The customer service was really good.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 9 years running.
Our Queen Nana and her iron strong will. Request list as long as her arm for a funeral. Luckily, a co-op funeral care appointment, a chat, a bit of structure, turned 1,000 royal requests into one brilliant way to honour Nana.
If it's hard to know where to start, we're here to help every step of the way. However you choose to say goodbye, we help you own it. Co-op. Owned by you, right by you. Search Co-op Funeral Care for your nearest funeral home.
Ah, springtime is coming. The season of renewal, of new beginnings, of a brand new Peugeot with savings of up to £3,250 across our car range. Enjoy the Peugeot Spring Upgrade event. Find your nearest retailer on Peugeot.co.uk and book a test drive today. Available on orders between the 16th of February and 16th of March 2026. Promotion subject to full terms and conditions. Visit Peugeot.co.uk.
The Philly cheesesteak is back at McDonald's and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese. Add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions and even more cheese. The Philly cheesesteak. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
I should never have started this, but you are having an enormous amount of fun with the Alistair Heath headline generator, and happily you're communicating much of that fun from me. Here's one that someone's put through the system, and it's come out with, the left's unhinged hatred of Michael Fabricant's wig is driving us towards a terrifying abyss. I don't know how they do this, but it's brilliant. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can rewind live radio on Global Player or the LBC app. Colin is in Liverpool. Colin, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Colin.
The WWW question. So yes. Pretty simple one, and it goes back to kind of the history of the internet when the internet was still a child. Mm. What you used to do, you used to have different servers for different purposes and different things. So let's say lbc.co.uk, you might have an email server, a web server, a file server, a couple of these different servers. And because they all had a distinct address, an IP address,
yeah.
So they had different identities. You would put a prefix on the front of it to designate which one you were trying to reach.
Right.
So in other words, to get to your mail, you would go to mail.lbc.co.uk.
Yeah.
If you wanted your website, you would go to www.lbc.co.uk.
Right.
Now, as things have evolved, there's been a shorthand that's been introduced to just mean that if you don't put the prefix in, it effectively routes you to where the www goes, because that's typically what people want. They want the website. So people have just started introducing the shortcut.
So it was never introduced. It just happened. It would always have worked, would it? Back in the day, if I just typed lbc.co.uk?
No, not necessarily.
Done. Okay.
Because, it used to be explicit that you had to, you know, go to what you were trying to access. But because people got to realize that, well, people were forgetting the www, they made it also, it's called a redirect. So if you don't specify an explicit server, it'll send you to the www one. You do occasionally find the website where the redirect is broken and it doesn't actually take you to the website.
Crikey.
So it's just a shorthand that's...
That's a perfect answer, though. Yeah. Qualifications, Colin?
I've been doing software and IT security stuff for 30-something years.
Well, I don't think you're in any danger of being out of a job soon, are you?
No, and I'm now becoming an AI expert as well.
So, are you really?
Yeah.
Gosh. Round of applause for Colin. Lovely answer.
Thanks very much.
No, thank you very much. Bad news for Dan, as he's asked me to call him, but it's not between you and me his real name. He writes, James, we have a sweep on today when the first caller with an answer comes on. If you can make it either caller 7 or caller 8, then I'm not going to be getting the coffees in this lunchtime. And for this, I will be eternally grateful. And then he writes his real name, and in brackets, but for the purposes of today, can you make it, Dan? That would be delicious. Why don't you want... Anyway, you lost, didn't you? Dan. Definitely not the name that's actually on your WhatsApp account. So who won? Who came in with the... That was the fourth call of the day, and that was the first answer. So that's quite a fun game, actually. A sweep on what... Because normally it can be quite late. It can come in at 9 or 10. Sometimes we don't really start on the answers until 12:45. But this week you've gone surprisingly early with a 12:22. A 12:22 at platform 3. Julia is in Dornoch. Question or answer, Julia?
Question, James.
Carry on, Julia.
It just occurred to me, I wonder why there are no green mammals. It seems like a reasonably useful thing to be, evolutionary-wise. I just wonder why no green mammals have evolved ever. Well, I don't think they have, anyway.
We had quite a big thing on the programme yesterday when we opened the show by pointing out that it's not easy being... I can't do it because of by-elections. But Keith made a list... Because I was saying, what are green things? And Keith made a list of loads and loads of green things. And then we ran out of time. Because, I mean, off the top of my head, Shrek, the Incredible Hulk, and the Jolly Green Giant are all green mammals. But unfortunately, they're all fictional creations.
They are.
The lady out of... Wicked, again, a fictional creation. So there are a lot of green mammals in fiction, but I haven't got Keith's list in front of me anymore, so I don't know whether he actually accidentally stumbled across any green mammals that exist in reality. Kermit the Frog, fictional.
Maybe one.
Kermit the Frog, fictional. Elphaba, that's her name, a fictional. All four of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, fictional.
They're not mammals, though, are they?
No. Oh, no, even if they were. Mike from Monsters, Inc. Mammal or monster? Can a monster be a mammal? I don't know. Is Shrek a mammal? Why are there any green mammals? Why are there no green mammals? To which an acceptable answer will be, actually, there is a green mammal, for example.
Indeed. That would be good.
Right, you're on. Yeah, green mammals. I love that question. Thank you, Julia. It is 12:24. Phil is staying in Scotland, in Inverness. Phil, question or answer?
Hi, James. Staying in the Highlands, even.
You're right.
I've got an answer to the German uniform trousers question.
Go on, excellent.
Like most of these things to do with military and uniform, it goes back to history, and this is from the sort of Prussian martial tradition. So these were the style of trouser worn by the Prussians. But the reason they're shaped the way they are is they're not actually trousers. They're what we would call a jodhpur, so like a riding trouser.
Yes.
I do remember there was a German Hosen-style word for it, but I can't remember what the first part of it was. And essentially, they're that shape because they're tight at the bottom, so they can be tucked into boots, but they're baggy around the knees, so that when you sit on a saddle or move around, your trouser doesn't then pull out the top of the boot.
So the cavalry became the tank regiments. They carried on wearing the same trousers.
Correct. And I guess they just sort of... Either it was a historical link or they just thought they were quite stylish. But yeah, they stuck with them in the same way that a lot of our uniforms today have linkages back to cavalry traditions.
Yeah, one of my favourites, actually, from my days in menswear, which an earlier caller alluded to, is the strange epaulette that you get on a trench coat. And there's a clue in the title as to why it's called a trench coat. But on one shoulder, there'll be a flap that you can unbutton and button up again. And that was for your rifle butt. And I mean, I was selling trench coats in the 1990s on Regent Street, and I'm fairly confident that most of the people I sold trench coats to were not routinely shouldering rifles to shoot their enemies, or indeed anything or anyone else. But the thing had persisted. The style had survived. They still built trench coats with one shoulder having a flap on it for exactly the same reason that you just alluded to or that you just described with the baggy trousers, or the baggy jodhpurs, to be more precise.
Yeah, absolutely. Things like duffel coats and Macintoshes, etc. Almost all of them are traditions in some form of uniform.
Cardigan, early cardigan. Qualifications?
When I was in the army, I used to train NCOs up to be instructors, and as part of it, they had to give both a theoretical and a practical lesson example. And I had a cavalry NCO who did a theoretical lesson on the history of cavalry uniforms.
Sensational. Perfect answer. Round of applause for Phil. I love that one. It is 12:26. A couple of phone lines free as they are vacated by Phil and Colin. 0345 606 0973 is the number you need to get your question on the board, or to answer Steve's question about nutmeg or Julia's question about green mammals. First question, of course, involving why we use that phrase to describe a sort of through the leg bamboozler in football, and why there aren't any of the latter. Why there aren't, apparently, to the best of our knowledge, there aren't any green mammals. 12:27 is the time. Luke is in Bromley. Luke, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry
James,
on.
My daughter had a hamster.
Yes.
Everyone loves a hamster. And my question is, why is it that it spends its whole entire life trying to escape? You get this hamster, you give it all you can, happiness and joy.
Yeah.
You cuddle it and stroke it, good food. And it's constantly, you put it down in the lounge, and it goes round and round trying to find a way out.
Yeah. You, well, what, I mean, it was hungry, probably, looking for... Well, you,
like,
you mean, why didn't the hamster just sit still, and let you stroke it or something?
We had a huge cage, with the cage within the cage. It was like, it was a massive thing.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Like a palace, a hamster palace.
It was an amazing thing.
Right.
It was privileged to the hill. Okay, it was like from Eton or something. And yet, you'd hear a constant rattling downstairs. You go downstairs because it's dark. It's
yeah. Time.
And you suddenly see the thing constantly biting away at the corner of the cage. I'm thinking, how can you be so selfish? You know,
why do you want to get out? Look what we've done for you.
Why are you trying to escape? And you put it on the stairs, and it goes run up the stairs, step at a step, and it goes round around the landing and tries to find.
So never stood still, this hamster.
But no hamster does. And you look at other hamsters, and they're all trying to escape.
Escape to where? I mean, escape from, we can do.
So
but escape
why?
Where to? Why are hamsters always trying to escape? What happened to it? Is it still with us?
It's gone to hamster hamster heaven.
It did move on. Shuffled off this mortal coil.
It lasted 3 years, though, which I'm told means it was a happy hamster, because it did...
Well, not that happy, mate. It was constantly trying to escape.
Exactly. So why? You put in your hands, it's constantly trying to jump off the settee, onto the floor, on its way.
Did it... Was it
never made it.
Was...
There's films like The Great Escape and things that constantly.
Did you only have the one hamster?
I had a hamster when I was younger. But
no, this hamster that we're talking about, what was its name?
Oh, it's called Oreo.
Did Oreo...
Black and white.
Was Oreo always trying to escape? I beg your pardon, was Oreo a lone hamster?
It was.
There it is.
Do you think it was after a mate?
I think he was looking for some.
Perhaps.
Well, I mean, what would you do? In those circumstances.
I don't know.
Well, answer the question.
I'm trying to escape. It's true. Trying to escape.
Well, we'll find out. But if you'd had two hamsters, I wonder if you would have had the same experience.
So why do hamsters try and escape is my question.
I know. It's on the board. I think I've answered it, but I'm not going to go definitive with that any more than I'm going to go definitive with my nutmeg answer to Steve. But I wonder if people who have two hamsters, a lady hamster and a gentleman hamster, whether or not they have similar experiences of ingratitude and footlooseness. We shall probably never know, but we may find out. It wasn't green, was it, your hamster, by any chance?
It was black and white, but James, you creep downstairs when he's rattling away, and then as soon as he sees you, he freezes.
Did you shout at it sometimes about its ingratitude? Did you say, are you not entertained?
What are you doing? Yeah, you push nuts through the cage and things.
What more do you want from me, Oreo?
Chuck it.
What more do you... I tell you what, that hamster really takes the biscuit, Luke.
It did. So why?
Why, indeed. It's 12:30. Amelia Cox has your headlines.
A law to allow terminally ill adults the right to choose to end their own lives has been approved in Jersey, but there are concerns about how long it took to get it onto the statute books. It's reported a similar bill for England and Wales could be talked out in the House of Lords. The man responsible for the Soham murders, Ian Huntley, has been seriously hurt after being attacked in prison. It's understood he was assaulted at HMP Frankland in County Durham this morning and has been taken to hospital. And a national investigation has concluded women and babies are being failed by NHS maternity services in England. The interim report has found there's a lack of kindness and compassion, as well as issues including racism and staff shortages. LBC weather, cloudy for much of the UK this afternoon, a band of rain pushing into the north and west, mild and windy, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name was Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the sports media industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Niamh, a sports media student in Year 12.
During class, I've edited football videos for social, reported on games, and even produced my own highlight packages. Working directly with the industry makes me excited for my future career in sports broadcasting.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
I'm Natasha and this is my NHS story. I went to the GP because I'd found a lump in my breast and the GP referred me to a CDC centre. It was just really welcoming from the moment I arrived. To just be reassured all in one day was fantastic.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
12.33 is the time. Questions that still need answers, largely about hamsters, green mammals and nutmeg. Liz is in Castle Point. Liz, question or answer?
I've got a question.
Yes.
I'd like to apologise that it's a little bit disgusting and gross, but it's about... yeah, sorry. It's about parasites. So there are these little
We're not allowed... it's a by-election on today. We're not allowed to talk about politics. Okay, be careful, please.
Okay, I'll be really careful. So, threadworms are really tiny, basic, little, annoying organisms, and they come out, or the females come out to lay eggs at night.
This is disgusting, though. Who took this call? I just need to talk to the producer. So, because someone's written on my screen, bedworms, which sound quite cute. My son's got bedworms. And they thought, oh, that sounds cute. I'll put it through to James. But your son's got threadworms, and now we're going to talk about now we're going to talk about when and where they come out.
No, we're not.
Oh, good. Carry on.
So the females come out at night time.
Yeah,
but I don't know how they know that it's night because they're so simple and they are in a place that's dark. How do they know it's night?
How do you know they're not there all the time?
They come out at night. That's part of what they do. I know that much.
Isn't it just because the host is very still?
I don't know.
If you were moving around...
I suppose it really only affects children. You can't make them sit still during the day.
Yeah. Yeah, well, exactly. So it is a really disgusting question, this, and we've managed to, for people who don't know exactly what it is that we're discussing, I'm glad and a bit envious, but we don't need to be any more graphic about this, but a threadworm only emerges from its lair, host yeah. at night, but it may be a coincidence because were said host... lying prone and supine in the middle of the day, then the worms may put in an appearance then as well. So,
they might be.
I think they probably would, for the reasons that you've kind of nailed, in that it can't really be conscious enough. It doesn't have a clock, does it? It doesn't have a little tiny threadworm watch to know what time. Right. So, and is he all right now? Did you get the right medication and everything?
Oh, yeah, it's just one tablet and it's done.
Yeah, but the whole family has to take them.
Yeah.
Don't say it like that. You didn't take. You didn't do the whole family, did you?
No, I did.
You really?
Pink little tablet.
Yeah, all right. But did you get one? Why? Because you're supposed to do two, aren't you? You're supposed to do one and then take another one a month later.
No, just one.
I wonder what we had. Okay.
a recurring case?
Why? No, it wasn't that. Maybe it wasn't a Threadworm. Going back a long time, because it is usually the little ones that bring this into the home, but given that they are more likely to be knocking about with lots and lots of people when they're at school. Okay, there we go. That's the one. Why do we think they only come out? Or when do they come out? If it's at night, why is it at night? Or is it simply the case that they come out when they are... still, very, very still. 12:37 is the time. If you want a little indication of what my life is like, okay, my inbox is a source, as you know, of never-ending wonder to me. It contains some of the sweetest, kindest messages that any human has ever received, and it contains some of the it contains some contributions that make Alistair Heath, the patron saint of the unhinged headline, look like the venerable Bede. It contains many applicants for Idiot's Corner, both witting and unwitting, and it sometimes contains evidence of how hard it is to plot a course on this programme between two poles. So in response to Luke's question about a hamster, and my suggestion that it may have had something to do with the fact that the hamster was lonely, I've received two messages. The first one says, hamsters are solitary creatures, they prefer to live alone. And the second one says, this is from Claire in Rugby, in Switzerland, it is illegal to keep a solitary hamster. I suppose technically that both of those statements could be true, but it seems unlikely, doesn't it? Who knows? Edwin's in Swanley. Edwin, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Hi, James. Thanks for a great show, by the way.
Oh, cheers, mate.
That's all right. So, what is the purpose of a bobble on a bobble hat?
I like that. When they were knitted, something to do with knitting techniques, easier to take off. Not really, get it off the... I mean, it could just be a style thing where they look better with a bobble on top, couldn't it?
If anything, they're a nuisance because they get caught in things and kids run up behind other kids and put them off because of the bobble.
The bobble. Yeah. Did you ever make a bobble as a kid? Do you remember with the cardboard and you No, you obviously don't. You cut a bit out of a cereal box. You cut two circles with a hole through the middle out of a cereal box, and then you would wrap the wool around inside and outside, and then you'd snip it at the end, and you had your own bobble.
Never done
that. I thought everyone did that. I didn't imagine this, did I? I didn't dream it. It wasn't just confined to Kidderminster. It was a nationwide enthusiasm. What is the point of a bobble? Is the question. On a bobble hat. I like it. You're on it's on the board. Edwin's bobble question. 0345 606 0973. When and why and where? Ah, hang on a minute. What if you were doing a job with low ceilings? And it would cushion the blow? No?
I'm not sure.
Why not? Well, I mean, it'd be a great thing to do if you were, like, down a mine or something.
It'd be funny if that was the answer.
Crawling through a tunnel and you bang your head a lot and someone thinks, do you know what I'm going to do, Edwin? I'm going to put a bobble on my hat. I can't see what else works unless it's just stylistic. Anyway, it's on the board. Thank you very much. James is in Brockworth. James, question or answer?
Hi, James.
Hi, James.
An answer.
Carry on.
So the answer is in relation to the hamsters trying to escape.
Yes.
What it basically is the hamsters have always had an instinct from their natural habitat of travelling great distances at night time to search for food. And because they have this need to store food, because they never know where they're next going to get it, even if they've got a full bowl in their cage, they've still got that active instinct to search for food, and their cage is only a tiny portion of what their habitat would be in the wild.
Wow. So they will just be off on the look for food, regardless of whether or not they've just had dinner, and regardless of whether or not they've got loads of food back in their cage, they will just be genetically programmed. Whenever they find themselves wherever they find themselves, they're genetically programmed to go and look for more food.
Indeed. I mean, and also the fact that they have pouches to carry food at great distances shows that they take much more than they need in order for future storage.
Because you never know, James.
Yeah, exactly.
And he could qualifications?
My qualification is only the fact that I was a keeper of hamsters when I was a child and read a book on hamsters.
What do you mean your only qualification is that you read a book about the subject? I mean, that's the ultimate qualification.
Yeah, I suppose so. Not an official one, but...
Professor of Religious Studies qualification? I read the Bible. I mean, how much more do you need to know to be a hamster expert?
Yes, professor from the University of Life.
Round of applause for Professor James.
Thank you.
He did his PhD in hamsterology. David's in Oslo. David, question or answer?
Hi, James. How are you doing?
Very well. What have you got?
Good, good. I made bubbles just like you, but that's not why I'm calling in.
Yeah, it wasn't just me, was it? They were actually fun to make.
Might be an 80s thing. It might be an age thing.
Maybe.
Yeah, I'm calling in to make sure you get the round of applause you deserve for the nutmeg answer you gave.
Quite right. Really? Really, the nutmeg one? Oh, happy days.
I've got a 12-year-old son who wants to be a pro footballer, and his favourite thing is to nutmeg me. And about a year ago, after doing it 1,000 times, he asked me why. Because I'm English, I was like, I can't answer. So I researched a bit, and the reason is, as you said, it's the spices, but specifically nutmeg, because they sold small pieces of wood, which were fashioned into nutmeg shapes. Dark wood.
So you could stick it in a probably not selling one nutmeg to one person, but you could sell... a sack of nutmeg, you could put a few wooden nuggets in there, and
a whole load of it,
you'd be able to charge a lot. You'd be making a lot of money for old rope, literally.
Yeah.
Qualifications, you looked it up.
Until the wooden part, I was like, yeah, all right, well, nutmeg would be the one that you'd replace with that. So, and a bonus fact, in Norway, they call it doing a window, luke. So that makes more sense for me, actually.
Because you can see straight through it?
An open window, I'd assume.
Oh, of course, being a bit daft, an open window. I like that. I'll share the round of applause with you. When's the last time you used a nutmeg?
Actually, I tried to make an egg custard, because you can't buy them over here, and it tasted horrible.
Did it? And tricky. Nutmeg wasn't the reason. Did you put too much nutmeg in it, do you think?
No, it was just the combination of the eggs and the pastry that you just can't get quite right, like the famous bakers in England. So, but the nutmeg was
so
good. I used it in
a good custard.
I put it in a ragu afterwards, actually.
Did you really? Sure. That's bold.
Yeah.
And did it rattle?
The nutmeg?
Yeah.
Don't think so.
No, because
I didn't shake it.
I had a very strange experience recently. I got sent a bunch of spices by a lovely lady called Ren, who runs a bespoke Indian cookery school, but also runs a spice market. And she sent me both Christmases, last Christmas and this Christmas, a bunch of spices. And I was making something the other day, and the nutmeg, and I don't know whether it's just because it's higher quality of nutmeg, there's two bits. There's a shell, and then there's the bit inside as well with nutmeg. And you can rattle it and hear it rattling. I should have brought my tin, shouldn't I? Because I'd never come across that before. So I don't know whether the normal bog-standard supermarket nutmeg is already cracked open. I promise you, it rattled when I shook the nutmeg.
I believe you. I live in Norway, so it cost me an arm and a leg to actually find the stuff over here, but I will give it a shake next time I invest.
Well, yeah, let me know. Well, maybe not. Yeah, that'd be weird. But anyway, I'll share the round of applause with you if you want. Lovely stuff. I like that. Thank you, David. There is another theory of nutmegs that quite a few people have texted me, which would refer to the part of the anatomy under which the ball passes when it is... nudged between a fella's legs, but I prefer our answer for a whole variety of reasons. It's 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Asylum hotel use down, small boat arrivals up, asylum case backlog down, enforced returns up. A mixed picture, but a changing one. And what must happen to fix maternity care?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
It's not easy being a clamp, stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd pay off my mortgage and my mum's mortgage.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw. But you forget to pay off those mortgages.
Whoops.
Because you're on a cruise with lots of money.
Money cruise, baby!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search The Birthday Draw and enter now from Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
The Henry sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
Get 3 months half price when you switch to an unlimited SIM with Three. That means quick streaming, faster downloads, and more money to spend on the things you love. Join the UK's fastest 5G network and get your unlimited SIM today. Buy now in store or see three.co.uk.
Unlimited 24-month light plan. Proof of switching required. Based on Ookla Speed Test Intelligence data, 2H 2025. All rights reserved. Subject to credit checks and terms.
My name's Mark, and this is my NHS story. The sensation in my neck was painful all the time. Once I spoke to my GP, they referred me to my CDC. They got me in very, very quickly. The amount of pain I went through for something so easy, why hadn't I done this 4 months before?
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, you live and learn, don't you? Especially during Mystery Hour. So mace, you're familiar with the spice mace. Mace is the outer layer with the seed, the nutmeg seed inside. And they are both harvested for spices. Somewhat unexpectedly, the mace is harder to harvest than the nutmeg. So once you've smashed it open, the nutmeg is a self-contained little seed. But the mace can splinter and go all over the place. So there it is. That's something I didn't know. I wasn't going mad. You can rattle it, but it wasn't a nutmeg I was rattling. It was the nutmeg that was rattling when I rattled the mace, because the nutmeg was the innards of the mace ball. I hope somebody somewhere finds that at least vaguely interesting, because I find it absolutely fascinating. Andrew is in Corfe Castle in Dorset. Andrew, question or answer?
I have an answer, James.
Carry on.
So it's an answer to the lady's question around green mammals.
Ah, yes, Julia.
So the short scientific answer really is that as mammals, we don't produce the necessary pigment to produce green hair or anything like that.
And do we know why that would be? Just as it's demonstrated, no. Because you'd have thought back in the day, if you and I were like hiding from predators in a grassy savannah, then having green hair would be really helpful.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess there would be other grass around us, so you could cover yourself in that. But yeah. There's definitely an evolutionary kind of answer to it. But however, the more interesting piece for Julia here, it would be that it really depends on who you are as to whether mammals are green or not. Oh. If you are, for example, a small little antelope or deer going about your daily life in the jungles of India, then to you, unfortunately, tigers are green. Because those deer or the antelope don't register that frequency of light
really? As
green. Yeah, because I remember as a kid watching kind of programs and looking at orange tigers in green backgrounds and jungles and thinking, well, that doesn't make a lot of sense, surely. So it's about perspective. So it's a slightly more philosophical answer to the question.
Yeah, so when is a mammal green? And, and the answer is when depends what mammal you are.
If you're human, then true. But if you are not human, you're the prey of something, and I'm sure it applies to other animals as well. But orange tigers don't make a lot of sense from our perspective.
Well, that's brilliant. I love that. Qualifications?
Oh, just a science geek, and someone with a mind where these little bits of trivia come in and they tend to stick for some reason.
That's helpful. I've got the opposite problem. Nothing ever sticks. But that's a lovely answer, and especially the little additional bit about the fact that actually you may well see a green mammal if you are not a human. You're a different mammal, different spectrums. And of course it makes sense. What's a tiger going to hide from with great orange stripes in the middle of the jungle? I'm still confused as to why we haven't developed evolutionarily green hair. It'd be very helpful in all sorts of, not that many environments, but if you wanted to hide in a field, well, then I suppose winter had come along I don't know. Well played, Andrew. What time is it? 12:51. I've probably got time to squeeze in another. Well, hang on. Which ones still need answers? So we've got Edwin's bobble hat. We've got Liz's bedworms, which we will probably call them instead of threadworms, which is a much grimmer prospect. We've done Gregor's www dot. We've done Andy's military trousers. We've done Steve's nutmeg. We've done Julia's green mammals. And we've done Luke's hamster. So it is only just the threadworms and the bobble hat that remains. I tell you what, get another question on if you want, and I'll have a crack at answering it myself. We're becoming victims of our own success on Mystery Hour now, but I still have to pick a winner, of course. I still have to pick my favourite contributor to receive the Mystery Hour game. Diane is in Ross-on-Sea. Question or answer, Diane?
answer, please, for the bobble hat.
Carry on.
You were almost right.
Story of my life.
It was for cushioning.
Yes, yes, of course
miners.
It was. Yes.
It wasn't miners, it was sailors. When they were going below decks, their likelihood of bumping their head on the beams was very, very likely.
Well, of course it was. Anyone who's visited the Tudor Rose will know that they're really pokey little places, aren't they, the old-fashioned ships? So the bobble hat would go, not only would it keep your ears warm, but it would keep your bonds safe as well.
Yes, and it would warn you beforehand not to raise your head too soon because you'd feel it brush as you were passing under a beam.
Qualifications?
I make reenactment clothing, historically accurate reenactment clothing for sailors.
For reenactments?
Yes, for reenactment.
Well, do you know that,
I also wanted to answer the military trousers because I know where they came from too.
Well, you know, this is quite uncanny, actually, because I don't know if you remember this call from last December. It's a couple of minutes long, so do bear with me.
Basically, a knight means a soldier.
Yeah.
They were a soldier. They come across, they fight for William the Conqueror. They are nobles, and they start like that. But it changes, and by about the 1200s, they start to become less noble, a commoner, or somebody not of noble birth or Norman birth can be a knight.
Okay.
And eventually that moves and changes again. You have, the introduction of all the laws to do with how wealthy you look, like sumptuary laws,
right.
I mean, around that time. The big change, to answer the caller's question, is about the 1350s, under King Edward III.
Yes.
King Edward III makes it a professional army.
What are your qualifications?
I have written a book called The Life and Times of a Medieval Knight, which comes out in January, and I was going to send you a copy. I don't know where to send it to.
I can't. I'm so glad I shut up when I did. I'm literally about to start lecturing the person who wrote The Life and Times of a Medieval Knight on the incorrect usage of the word knight in the context of the medieval period.
There is an Anglo-Saxon word there is an Anglo-Saxon word that sounds like knight, and they also say that it comes from that. There's different kinds of knights, but a knighthood itself is an award of land and responsibility to the lord, and you get given a knight's fee, so you might have half an eighth fee in one lord, and you might have a half a fee for a different lord, and you do your responsibilities, but under feudal system you're responsible for people below you as well as those reporting to those above. So you would look after the land and the people for the lord, and you'd pass the money up.
This is wonderful stuff. And how long was the book in the writing?
To be honest, I've phoned you quite a lot when I should have been writing it. I'm the one who homeschools the feral kids.
Well, you've got your work cut out, haven't you? A glutton for punishment.
Yeah.
And I have now in my hands a copy of The Life and Times of a Medieval Knight, Sir Geoffrey de Langley and Family, by Sandy and Redditch to you, but now to the world of publications and publishing, Sandy Wainwright, who, to go back to Diane in Ross-on-Sea, who also does the enactments.
Yes.
It's a small world, isn't it? So she's got one coming up in May at Evesham Medieval Market, but the big one, as you probably know, is at the beginning of August when they recreate the Battle of Evesham Medieval Festival.
Oh!
You're probably kicking people out for these events and didn't even know that you and Sandy were on the same thing.
I mostly do for our local groups. But
she does it as well. She does Vintage Stitches historical knitwear on Facebook. So you're in the same sort of ballpark. I wonder what it is about this programme that attracts women like you and Sandy, Diane.
well, you know, we're sitting around the house listening to you because we can listen to you and do
these wonderful things at the time. And the book is magnificent. I've started reading it, The Life and Times of a Medieval Knight by Sandy Wainwright. It's published now by Pen and Sword Publishers, or www.pen-and-sword.co.uk. Do you want to mention your business, your commercial enterprise, or are you already inundated you're already inundated with requests? You're on. Round of applause for Diane.
Time rather than a business.
I know, lovely. I love it. I'm a big fan of that whole business, and especially as a kid, but it's one of those things that now my kids are growing up, I can get back into again. I love that, and congratulations to Sandy. So it feels like one of the family's got a book out, doesn't it? That was such a lovely call to the programme, and it was all real, and it's a really good book, with proper indexes for the grown-up historians, and just a rip-roaring read for those of us who are not that academic. Mitch is in Southend. Hang on a minute. Diane, come back. Diane! Oh, she's gone. We've got a challenge to Diane's theory as to why bobble hats have bobbles on top. Diane, are you there?
I am.
Well, we were all getting on so well. Unfortunately, Mitch is here to stick a right old spike in your spokes. Mitch, what have you got?
Bobbles were also used. I'm not disputing the land. Bobbles were originally used as a signal from Scandinavian countries with big old snowdrifts. And if you fell into a snowdrift, you had a chance of being spotted with a nice brightly coloured bobble against the snow if people were looking for you.
So your whole body would be submerged in snow, but the little bobble would be poking out on top, and that would help Mountain Rescue to locate you.
Apparently so.
I'm not having it, mate.
Okay.
Well, don't just say okay. I was gearing up for a bit of a banter-based fight then.
I've been told this by a friend from Finland.
Oh, what was his name?
Her name was... I'm sorry, I used to work with her, I can't remember her.
Helga.
No, Helga will do, yeah. Suzanne, actually. And it came up in conversation one day. She said it was a proper did you know? Fallen a big snowdrift after too many vodkas or whatever.
I think she might have been yanking your chain. Did you return this nugget of information by telling her about how the Earl of Dartmouth invented darts?
No, I might have told her about sandwiches, though.
That one would be true. I'm going to give you half a round of applause for being a good sport. Oh, you got a whole one there. I don't think Nate's new in the job. I don't think he's worked out how to cut it off halfway through yet. So can you just give me half of that back, please, Mitch?
Yeah, hang on.
Thank you very much. That is it for another week. Thank you very much. Oh, the winner! Who is the... Oh, let's give Mitch a game for being such a good egg at the end there. Is that a reasonable... That's reasonable, isn't it? I think... Yeah, give him a game. Why are you looking at me like that? Who else is going to get it? No, I'm giving it to Mitch. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back. You know how. Download the app. Anyway, it's free. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick. But now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
I've got a theory about bubble hats.
Go on, then.
Children only.
Well, as in, this is you the law of Fogarty, under Fogarty's glorious rule, children only.
Children only.
I think I probably agree. I did have one once, and I did probably look like an idiot.
Well, I say this as somebody who looks like an idiot in a beanie, as well as a bobble hat. So,
A beanie. Keep your ears warm. But bobble hats, children, no doubt. Sounds like an Alistair Heath headline, that. Carry on.
On much more important matters, as more MPs feel free to put forward the message, have more British babies. I'll share with you what I think must be in Baroness Amos's full report when it comes back in April on maternity, the maternity sector in this country. Today's interim report didn't shock any of us, but it should. Jersey in the Channel Islands has approved a law to allow terminally ill adults the right to choose to end their own lives. Meanwhile, Westminster struggles over the same issue, so let's talk about that from two. But we begin with all of the latest asylum statistics. Hotel use down, small boats up. I could go on. Things down, things up, things the same, things changing, things shifting. How much does a government's asylum and immigration policy matter to you? Is it what you judge them on?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From
from Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. Jersey has approved plans to allow terminally ill adults to choose to end their own lives. The bill took four times longer to pass into law than others passed on the island, as a similar legislation in England and Wales is now expected to fail. It's understood the government is not expected to grant the law more time in the House of Lords to debate hundreds of amendments. Chief Executive of Care Not Killing, Dr. Gordon MacDonald, says he's pleased about that.
People can live for years. I mean, I got a letter the other day from somebody who's lived for 25 years having been given a 6 months prognosis. So I think that that shows why it's so complicated. And that's why the Lords has been taking their time, looking at this in detail, scrutinising it properly, and as they should do so.
The man behind the Soham murders, Ian Huntley, is seriously hurt in hospital after being attacked in prison. It's understood he was assaulted at HMP Frankland in County Durham this morning. He's serving a minimum 40-year sentence for the murders of Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman in August 2002. The Prime Minister has told LBC he's concentrating on helping families with the cost of living and not getting embroiled in political rows. It comes as the Tory leader, Kemi Badenoch, refused to apologise after claiming Labour is being called a pedo defenders party. The party's MPs have reportedly complained the phrase has been shouted at them in the wake of the Peter Mandelson, Jeffrey Epstein saga. But Sakir Starmer has told us he's concentrating on the job in hand.
This week we've been working hard to make sure that energy bills are brought down. There are other measures. There's rail fares have been frozen, prescription charges have been frozen, living wages will be going up in April. And of course, inflation is dropping now to 3%, and I hope it will be dropping even further. These are the issues that I think matter most to the country.
Peter Mandelson has always denied he had prior knowledge of Jeffrey Epstein's sex crimes during their friendship. A damning review into England's maternity services has found a reluctance to admit mistakes is contributing to failings. It identified issues including staff shortages, racism, and a lack of kindness and compassion. And the online grocery shop Ocado has announced it's cutting up to 1,000 jobs as part of efforts to save about £150 million. The roles will go in the UK and across the world. Meanwhile, Sainsbury's has revealed around 300 jobs are at risk across the supermarket and Argos as part of changes to tech teams at head office. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 20 points at 10,827. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy for much of the UK this afternoon. A band of rain pushing into the north and west. Mild and windy, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Interesting to hear the Prime Minister there in the news bulletin saying what he felt were the issues that matter most to the country, so to you and to me. He was talking mostly there, wasn't he, about cost of living issues. But one of the big stories today, if not the biggest story today, is the sort of broad spectrum asylum and immigration figures that have come out. They relate to last year, not this current year. It's a mixed picture. And depending on where you come at this question from, this whole subject from, it's either good or bad, depending on how you see it. But let me, in a nutshell, and it will be a nutshell, I won't give you lots of statistics, it's a nutshell really. The use of asylum hotels, which has certainly been controversial, that is down. Small boat arrivals across the channel are up. But the people in those boats amount for around a third, there or thereabouts, of asylum claims in this country. So people claim asylum here in lots of different ways. They may have been a student here. They may have come in other ways. They may have a work visa that they want to extend in some way and feel they have an asylum claim that they can make, all kinds of different ways. But those small boat arrivals are up 13%, so fairly significant. And that whole central thing of controlling the flow of boats across the channel is clearly a political hot potato, whatever you personally think about it. Asylum backlog cases, or the backlog of asylum cases, I should say, is down. Enforced returns, so deportations made by people whose asylum claims have been turned down or have been found to be unlawfully here, those returns are up. It is a mixed picture, but it is a changing one. And I want to get a sense from you this hour of the role and the prominence, or not, that immigration and asylum plays in how you will judge this government, or indeed any government. We do talk about it a lot. You may think we talk about it too much. Politicians may wish to talk about it less, but an awful lot of their constituents do want to talk about it. Speaking to LBC, Alex Norris, Minister for Border Security and Asylum, said that today's figures show the government is striking at the heart of the vile gangs.
Under our watch, the people smuggling gangs are facing the consequences for abusing our borders and putting lives at risk. Enforcement action against smuggling gangs is now up more than a third than last year, with major long-lasting disruptions that strike at the heart of these vile gangs up 40%. But this isn't enough, and we must go further. That's why we're making sweeping reforms to scale up removals of those who have no right to be here and eliminate the incentives that draw people to come to our country illegally in the first place. And on top of that, our Border Security Act equips officers with better tools to go further to tackle these gangs by gathering more intelligence through greater powers to seize phones and cutting off their supply chains.
It give you a bit more detail on those numbers, because up 40% could be, you know, 40% of two, couldn't it? So let me give you a sense of the numbers. Those gangs that he alludes to, people smuggling gangs, they were thwarted by border officials more than 3,600 times last year, according to this new data today. Since it was established in 2024, the Home Office's Border Security Command has overseen a 75% increase in disruption activity of gangs. This includes the conviction and arrest of gang members, seizures of cash, and short-term foiling of planned crossings. Emphasis on short-term there, because clearly the crossings themselves are up by 13%. So things like confiscation of boats and other equipment takes place. The latest figures show an average of 10 of these disruption activities occurred each day in 2025. So clearly some of the work that they're doing is stopping the gangs and therefore stopping some crossings. But the crossings themselves are up, and there's the wider, I know I gave you a thumbnail sketch of it, but I don't want to bore you to death with the statistics. But the thumbnail sketch is that asylum hotel use is down, small boat arrivals are up, asylum case backlog is down, enforced returns of people deemed to have no place here in asylum terms is up. That mixed picture. Lou Calvey joins me, Director of Asylum Matters. Good afternoon to you, Lou.
Good afternoon, Sheila.
What's your reading of what we've got today here in these statistics?
Very much similar to the summary that you've extracted, without wanting to kill people with lots of technical statistics. In a nutshell, we're seeing relatively small rises in small boat crossings. We're seeing an overall slight decrease in overall asylum claims. I think there's a few stats that tell the story, though, that's hidden in